10 p.m. with another LBC Consumer Hour. In the meantime, if you've missed any of tonight's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app, where you can stay up to date with all the latest news and opinion, put your news categories in the order you want, pause and rewind live radio, and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the all-new official LBC app for free from your app store now. Coming up at one is Richard Spur, but next here on LBC is Nick Abbott.
Thank you, Dean. A packed programme tonight. We're going to talk about the possibility of towns in the north of England hosting the Olympic Games in 14 years. There's a campaign to get children reading in school by setting books that reflect a more diverse community that contain characters that are just like them. Farmers are struggling to sell their goods to Europe. We'll find out why. We'll talk about the huge interest rate being levied on the huge loans that university students are saddled with. We'll check in with our US correspondent for the latest from there and get a weather update to find out if it will ever stop raining. But first, Keir Starmer's right-hand man resigns. Should Keir stay or should he go too? That and more with me, Nick Abbott, after the new news at 10 on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock. The Prime Minister has replaced his Chief of Staff following the resignation of Morgan McSweeney over the Peter Mandelson affair. He stepped down over his part in appointing him as the British Ambassador to Washington, despite his friendship with the dead American paedophile Jeffrey Epstein. But LBC's Deputy Political Editor Aggie Chambray says his departure could cause even more problems.
Morgan McSweeney has been a central part as Chief of Staff in government, and I think there are lots of people today worrying about what this Labour Party will look like without him. Lots of people who have made those comments in the past about how without Morgan McSweeney by his side, Keir Starmer would no longer be able to be leader of the Labour Party.
Sir Keir Starmer is expected to address Labour MPs tomorrow. He's also now due to talk to the Women's Parliamentary Labour Party on Wednesday following Prime Minister's questions. The Labour MP for Southend West and Lee, David Burton-Sampson, has been talking to LBC. He says now is not the time for the Prime Minister to step aside.
We've seen too much of the instability of Prime Ministers coming and going, and we saw it under the last government. And we need to reflect on where we are at the moment. Keir is leading amazingly on the world stage at a time when the geopolitical situation is really, really ropey.
Morgan McSweeney's role will be filled by his two previous deputies. Vidya Alexan and Jill Cuthbertson have been announced as the new acting chiefs of staff. There'll be more on this with Nick Abbott during the next hour here on LBC. Police in Lancashire investigating the death of a student say they're holding a 34-year-old man who was known to her. He's been arrested on the suspicion of murder after 19-year-old Carla Georgescu was found dead in Preston on Thursday. The Kremlin says it's identified three suspects following the shooting of a high-profile military figure. Vladimir Alexeyev was attacked at a block of flats in Moscow. Russian military intelligence says one of the men accused is a citizen of the country who was born in Ukraine. And almost 100 flood warnings have come into effect across the UK following continued spells of heavy rain since the new year. A yellow alert for downpours has been issued by the Met Office, affecting the south of England and parts of Wales. The forecaster Jim Dale has been telling LBC weather systems appear to have got stuck.
We've been in low pressure now virtually from the beginning of the year. There's reasons for that big blocking high pressure over Scandinavia. That's where the high pressure is, where it's very, very cold, but it's blocking everything that's coming in.
LBC weather mostly cloudy overnight with rain, which will move north. Mist and fog could develop in Northern Ireland and over higher ground as well. We'll see a low of around 6 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Tim Daly.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Abbott.
Good evening. So, as you probably know, Keir Starmer's Chief of Staff has quit Downing Street. Morgan McSweeney, who's been one of Starmer's closest aides for nearly 6 years, resigned today after pushing for the appointment of Peter Mandelson as Britain's ambassador to the US. McSweeney said he was taking full responsibility for advising the PM to do that. saying that in the circumstances, the only honourable course is to step aside. Let's talk about this with Andrew Fisher. Andrew is a former senior policy advisor for Jeremy Corbyn and wrote the 2017 and 2019 Labour manifestos. And he joins us on the line now. Hello, Andrew.
Oh, good evening, Nick.
To what extent do you think is Keir Starmer actually in Downing Street because of Morgan McSweeney?
I think he's in the Labour leadership largely to Morgan McSweeney. He certainly masterminded his leadership campaign. I think, you know, Labour got into office on a very low share of the vote at the last election. And I think chiefly the people to thank for Labour's election are surnames Johnson, Truss and Sunak. But clearly Morgan McSweeney played a role. But I think it's sometimes slightly overemphasised. You know, Labour had a very good position. It was on 40% in the polls at some points, but it ended up getting wheedled down to 33.7%. Labour certainly wasn't elected on a big surge of enthusiasm for Keir Starmer. It was elected on the basis of people wanted the Tories out, and the right-wing vote had split fairly evenly, as it turned out, between Reform and the Tories.
Yeah, but now he's in, and since then, how much of the direction that Labour has taken to now in office been down to Morgan McSweeney, do you think?
I think he's played a massively influential role, and I think it's more than him, and it's always, you know, reductive to personalise these things entirely, but it's become a very factional and narrow operation, and I think Labour's been worse off for that. I think if you look at not just the appointment of Peter Mandelson, who's clearly a personal friend of Morgan McSweeney, but some of the decisions that have been taken over the last 18 months around the winter fuel payments, around cuts to disability benefits and all the other U-turns that Labour's done. It's because they haven't consulted. They haven't listened to other parts of the party. It's been very narrow, very much driven from the centre without consultation with the party, with the unions, with Labour MPs who have, you know, rebelled in pretty unprecedented numbers, given that they have just won a landslide, at least in Parliament. So it's, I think it's been a mess, and I think this is an opportunity for a reset of the culture of the Labour Party, which has become, I think, as the whole Mandelson scandal suggests, too factional, too narrow, and too deferential to wealth and power as well.
You know, people are talking about Morgan McSweeney as being mentored by Peter Mandelson. In fact, a word I came across today I've never seen before, that Morgan McSweeney was Mandelson's mentee. And if that's true, then to what extent has Peter Mandelson been responsible for the direction that Labour has taken since the election?
Well, we've seen quite a lot. That we saw before the election that he was basically playing the role of unofficial advisor, Peter Mandelson, within Starmer's office. And then there's the revelation that my colleague at the iPaper broke this week that Peter Mandelson was involved in the vetting of Labour candidates at the last election. So some people who are Labour MPs, perhaps unbeknownst to them, to be fair, owe it to Peter Mandelson that they're there at all, because he passed them as okay. And whilst, obviously, as we saw, vetting other people for very spurious reasons often, to keep them out because of their politics. And that's what I mean about this very narrow culture of the Labour Party. It's become dominated by one faction that seems to take great delight in beating up the other factions more than it does in running the country at times.
But do you think that the Keir Starmer faction, if indeed there is such a thing as you've described, has an aggressive stance towards the other members of the other factions within the Labour Party because of the mess that they went through, or the sort of fright night that they went through with Jeremy Corbyn? Not entirely his fault. The right-wing press levelled their guns at him and started pounding away on a daily basis. But do you think that they were trying to escape that?
No, I think it's a project that's gone on before. I mean, Peter Mandelson, when he was in, Tony Blair's government, said he wanted to see the left in a sealed tomb from which it could never escape. But this isn't due to the trauma of, so-called trauma of Jeremy Corbyn. Who, by the way, despite all the attacks he had on him in the right-wing press, you're quite right, got more votes in 2019, which was a bad, very bad result, than Starmer got in 2024. So, right. You know, I think it's important to put these things in perspective. But that wing of the party has been absolutely factional. And it's not just against the left, my bit of the left, if you like, the Jeremy Corbyn, John McDonnell kind of wing of the left. It's against anyone sort of vaguely in the sort of centre-left has been purged as well from any position of power. And it's, I think it's quite damning that, you know, a lot of people, like we saw with Andy Burnham just, 2 weeks ago, when he said, look, I want to stand in the Gorton-Denton by-election, you know, might well have been, and we'll see in a couple of weeks, the only Labour candidate that could have held the seat. And he was blocked from doing so purely because he was seen as a challenger to Keir Starmer. Wasn't in the interest of the party. Wasn't in the interest of, you know, didn't say to local members, you decide, it's your selection. It was, no, we're going to block you from the top. And that, I think, it tells you something about the culture of the party and what it's become.
Right, but does the culture of the party actually reflect the man at the top, or is he sort of being blown around in the wind like a rudderless boat?
Well, I mean, it doesn't reflect well on him either way, does it, in that scenario? I mean, he's either rudderless and doesn't really know what's going on, and it's the bad advisers who are leading him astray, which tells you he's quite weak, or it's him driving it, which tells you he's a bit nasty and venal, which neither of which is a good look. And I think the problem is, you know, he is, you know, whatever you think of him, whatever I think of him, the polling tells us he is the most unpopular prime minister in British polling history. I mean, that goes back to the 70s, you know, kind of reliable polling on what do we think of the prime minister. That's a very, very bad situation to be in. And even since 2024, when Labour did only poll 33.7%, we're down to about 18-19% in the polling currently today. You know, we've nearly halved our vote from the 2024 election. This is in a terrible state for the party. I mean, I don't think it's ever been in a weaker state. But not for this extended amount of time. There have been little blips under all leaders. But this is a real problem for the party. And unless it changes its culture, changes its policies, I think it really doesn't understand the existential crisis it's in.
And with McSweeney as the PM's chief advisor, you could say, in fact you just have, that things haven't gone particularly well. So given that, and it's been obvious that that's been the case for quite a while now, should Starmer have actually changed McSweeney for somebody else a long time ago?
Well, I think the thing is, it's not been clear that Keir Starmer actually disagrees with Morgan McSweeney. And every time the Labour Party has been forced to change position, often by its own backbenchers, rebelling over disability benefit cuts or planning rules or whatever else it's been, there's always been this slightly sort of nasty briefing against MPs. Some MPs have been suspended, even though the party now adopts their position. And so there's never been a kind of admission, oh, we did get that wrong, I'm sorry. It's just plough on with the next kind of thing that alienates the public and alienates its own MPs. So I don't know is the honest answer, but I think that the problem is much, much deeper than Keir Starmer and Morgan McSweeney. And I do think there needs to be a much bigger cultural shift within the party. Maybe this can be the start of it. Maybe there'll be a bit of reflection and introspection, but I'm not hopeful.
Yes. Now, Sue Gray used to be Keir Starmer's chief of staff. She resigned. Starmer got somebody else. And now this one, Morgan McSweeney, he has now resigned. Do you think that Keir Starmer can just appoint somebody else and move on regardless?
No, it needs to be a much, much, much deeper reform of what he's doing, how he's coming across to the public, the policies he's offering for people. You know, Labour was elected on a manifesto that had one word on it. And to be honest, the rest of the manifesto wasn't a lot deeper than that. It said change. Do people feel like things have changed? Does life feel like it's got better? Does your finances feel like they've got easier? Has the housing crisis eased? Have the NHS waiting lists gone down substantially? No.
But do you think that's a reasonable thing to expect in such a short period of time, after 14 years of the Tories smashing the place up?
Absolutely. Look, nobody should have thought it was going to all be sweetness and light within 18 months even, which is what they've had now. But it hasn't changed. And I think the other problem is people got fed up of the drama of the Tories. They got fed up with the scandal, with the taking dodgy donations, with the personal sort of, the kind of factionalism and the infighting and so on. And actually we've had more than that. We've had the freebie scandal. We've had all the U-turns on policy and bad decisions that preceded them, and then we've had this again, this sort of defending of quite terrible people in Peter Mandelson, who everybody knew was a wrong one. I mean, he'd been sacked twice from Tony Blair's government, for goodness sake.
But do you not recall that when Mandelson was, perhaps not where you live, but the feeling that I got was that when Mandelson was appointed to, go into the snake pit that is Donald Trump's America, people thought, oh, yes, that's right. That's just the very chap. He's a shark, but he'll be our shark.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is with a shark, it's going to bite you, ultimately, and it has come back to bite them. I think that's a very good analogy, really. But, we mustn't forget there wasn't a vacancy for the U.S. ambassador. We had a U.S. ambassador who had built a relationship with the Trump administration, an experienced lifelong diplomat, who was sacked, effectively, or moved, and told, no, we want our person in there. And I think that, again, just tells you it is their way or the highway. And we've seen that with the way they treat their own MPs. We've seen it with the way they treat people within the party. And, again, it's come back to bite them. I hope this time they learn from it. I'm not hopeful.
But because McSweeney was so closely associated with Peter Mandelson, do you think that in him and Mandelson going at the same time, it sort of cleans Keir Starmer's hands of this, and that you could be breathing, fresh oxygen first thing Monday morning, and it's a brand new start.
I think that's the opportunity Keir Starmer's got now, is to treat that clean and perhaps to come out with an announcement. He talked about banning MPs from having second jobs. He could have done that on day one. He could have said, we're going to limit the amount of donations you've got. You've got to declare them. I mean, we saw with Nigel Farage the other day, he'd made hundreds of thousands of pounds of donations, recorded them late, and just got a rap on the knuckles. Well, if you're a benefit claimant and you go into your appointment with your job centre officer 10 minutes late, you can end up getting your benefit sanctioned. You don't just get given, oh, well, don't worry, don't do it again, and a slap on the wrist. So I think there's this feeling that there's one rule for those at the top and another rule for somebody else. And if Keir Starmer can kind of channel that frustration that's out there in the public, and say, look, I'm clamping down on this. I've had enough. I've made mistakes, we've made mistakes, but now we're going to clean it up. You might win some people over with that, and it is an opportunity, I agree.
Right, so in another scenario, Keir Starmer says, right, I can't be bothered with this anymore. That's it, I'm leaving. So who could do a better job?
Well, I mean, if you look at the polling, almost anybody. I mean, Keir Starmer's the most unpopular prime minister in history. But, I mean, it's a serious question, Nick. But, look, we know that, either them or people around them, whether it's Wes Streeting or Angela Rayner and others, are definitely, kind of lobbying for that, knowing that, looking at the polling and looking at what's likely to happen in the Gorton and Denton by-election, or if not in the May elections, that Keir Starmer's probably going to go. There are people doing that. I mean, look, and Andy Burnham, and I'm not a big fan of Andy Burnham. I think he's a decent enough person, but he's not quite in my position on the Labour Party. He's the only Labour politician in the country who polls positively. I think he's done a really good job in Greater Manchester on transport. He's done some decent things on housing, which is pretty much the two main powers he's got up there. Clearly he'd be the front runner, and he is. He's the members' choice, he's the public's choice, if you look at polling and surveys.
But is he a prime minister, though? Because I do get the sense that, we're still riven with classism in this country, and it's almost as though, despite ourselves, we would prefer an old Etonian.
Oh, well, I would hope the British public, having had quite a few of them in recent years, and looking at how well they've turned out, would have hopefully reflected on that as well. We all need to hold our hands up. We elect these people at the end of the day. It's not gone well. So, but look, ultimately, it's about the policies, not the personalities. And I think, we need to change that. The frustration that people had, and the reason people kicked out the Tories in massive numbers in 2024, and the Tory vote absolutely collapsed, was because things had got worse. And if you like, the reason why Labour's polling is so bad now is because people don't think they've got better in 18 months. That's where it's come from. It's that same frustration. Obviously, there are bits and pieces about individual decisions that Keir Starmer's made and, Peter Mandelson and taking freebies and so on that have added to that. But it's fundamentally that same thing. it doesn't feel like the country's going in the right direction. It doesn't feel like our standards of living are going in the right direction. It doesn't feel like public services are getting better. It doesn't feel like the housing market is getting better for young people. Those are the things that any leader's got to address. It's not about whether they look good in a suit or which school they went to or whether they're on one wing of the party or the other. It's have they got the policies and the vision, and can they convince people and say, look, okay, it might take time, but here's the direction I'm going to take us on, and I will be absolutely solid in that. I don't think any leader, actually, in the last, 15 years at least, has given us that sense.
Very good to talk to you, Andrew. Thanks so much for that. Andrew Fisher, former senior policy advisor for Jeremy Corbyn, who wrote the 2017 and 2019 Labour manifestos. So, what's your take on this then? Do you think that Keir Starmer has actually been quite unlucky in government? Absolutely nothing has gone his way since he moved into number 10. I mean, he seems like a decent sort, but do you sometimes just have to admit that your luck is up? 0345-6060-973 LBC.
LBC. To be or not to be.
Right now we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
Sunlight's guaranteed over 50 plan gave confidence to Jane and Chris. With their insurance sorted, they're becoming naturists. Cutting loose in their birthday suits, feeling elegant and free. But when they answered the door, the postman saw more than he expected to see. Sunlight, a little confidence goes a long way. Affordable cover with a cash payout. Search Sunlight Cover today.
Premiums paid could exceed the payout. Full cover after 1 year. Ages 49 to 85.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the journalism industry. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Molly, a journalism student in year 12.
Outside of the classroom, we run our own news platform called The Loop. I do a daily news bulletin and produce videos for socials. We learn everything we need to be a journalist and have even learned alongside the news team at Global.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. Globalacademy.com.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
We are talking about Keir Starmer's travails. His right-hand man has just resigned. He took full responsibility for pushing Peter Mandelson, his mentor, as the US ambassador. And that worked out particularly badly for all concerned. And the question is, what should Keir Starmer do now? Dust himself down, brush himself off and start all over again? Or invite somebody else to take the helm? 0345-6060-973. Carnforth, Annie.
Oh, Nick. Well, I think if he actually cared about the party, or the country for that matter, I think he would resign, because he is so unpopular. I mean, I agreed with everything that Andrew Fisher said. And you said, oh, but he was so unlucky. I don't think he was unlucky. They just made some absolutely ridiculous decisions. Right from the start, from the cutting the winter fuel payment to most pensioners, attacking disabled people. It's not the kind of things that people expect from the Labour Party. It's the kind of things that people expect the Tory Party to do.
But do you not think that he was actually addressing a problem, that if the funding for welfare continues to go up at its current trajectory, it's not something that the country can afford anymore? So he was perhaps just trying to, knock the corners off some of it. And the winter fuel allowance, you know, there's a lot of pensioners who are considerably, who are some of the richest people in the country. They don't need it.
No, but I mean, the way they did it, you know, doing it on pension credit level, I mean, pension credit level is absolutely poverty level. And we have, you know, one of the most lowest pensions in Europe as it is. Mm-hmm. So, you know, yes, obviously there are people who don't need it, but to put it, you know, to use pension credit as that cutoff point was absolutely ridiculous. And, you know, I don't know what they were thinking. I think they just got carried away because they got such a big majority. They just thought, all right, we can come in and do what we like.
But do you think a bit of it was also that they've been out of power for so long that they weren't quite prepared for the sort of tsunami of information that was coming at them once they did walk into number 10?
I think they should have been prepared because they've been in, you know, out of power for so long. They should have had the right policies in place. In fact, you know, this is how they sold themselves on change. But, you know, to a lot of people, it didn't feel like change. It felt like more of Cameron and Osborne, you know, of austerity and cuts. And, you know, you're saying, oh, well, there isn't enough money. But, you know, they're spending billions more on arms at the moment and, you know, billions funding the war in Ukraine as well. But actually, they've just announced a few weeks ago that they were going to spend billions more on new arms factories.
Well, there's always money for bombs and bullets.
Exactly. Whereas there's not, you know, money to run the health service properly or to look after people who are vulnerable.
Do you think he's actually had enough time to make a significant difference in the NHS, though? I mean, in such a short period of time, it's one of the biggest employers in the world. It's a massive super tanker that takes ages to turn around, surely.
Yeah, absolutely it does. But I do think some of the things they've done are not necessarily the best things. I mean, for example, they just a couple of weeks ago, I rang up our surgery, and now they've gone over to everything has to be done online. Well, you get some people, particularly people, you know, older than me, who just are not able to do that, or people who have, you know, dementia and all sorts of people who just can't do online stuff, and you absolutely have to do it that way. I got in a mess, and I mean, you know, I'm not great at doing this. These things, but I'm better than I used to be. But I got in a muddle and had to ring them, and I could tell the receptionist had, you know, so many people ringing that morning because they were trying to book an appointment online, and we needed a home visit, but there was no thing to press for home visit, so I had to ring them, and she said, oh, I'm really sorry. She said, it's not just our surgery. She said, it's all, you know, it's the whole country, it's the government, and yeah. I said, thanks, West Streeting, and she said, oh, yeah, West Streeting needs a slap, because obviously it was causing them lots of problems.
Well, you maybe, know? But, you know, it was the Conservative, when the Conservatives took over, we had the number one rated health service in the world, and then you know, 14-15 years later, this is where we're at. Annie, appreciate that. Thanks for that. 0345 6060 973. Peterborough, Maurice.
Well, it's Morris, actually.
Morris,
Nick, thank you.
My apologies.
When I'm in France, je m'appelle Maurice, and it goes down perfectly, of course.
Yes.
So, Keir Starmer is an absolute plank. He has no empathy with anything that any person who lives in this country wants to happen. He absolutely despises most of us.
Well, no, I don't think you can say that.
Well, I did.
Well, I know you said
it,
but I don't think that...
I'm approaching 82 years of age.
Your birth is irrelevant. Your birth date, that's no bearing, has no bearing on whether Keir Starmer has...
Really? Okay, thank you, Nick.
Right. So who would be better then, in your opinion?
Oh, for goodness sake. There is nobody in the Labour Party who would be better... In reality,
there's people that would that look on the surface as though they care deeply about their constituents. Surely,
my MP doesn't.
Right. Well, I don't know about that, but Angela.
Well, because he's aged 23. He was aged 22 when he was elected, and I find that monstrously. Insulting, because this is a boy who has no experience of any form of life, and he is a Labour MP, and I find that monstrously.
Well, then you're going to have to have a chat with your neighbours, Peter, because they're the ones that made that happen. But I appreciate the call. Thanks for that. This text says, as a member of the Conservative Party, I desperately want Keir Starmer not to resign, as there's no way that Labour will get elected in the next general election, and anyone who would replace him would be so far to the left of Starmer that they would make our destroyed economy even worse. Happy just to see through the next 3 years until the country wakes up and realises Labour was not the answer, says Simon in Bray. It's difficult to tell with text, but I'm not sure whether you are acknowledging that it is your own Conservative Party that destroyed the economy and that the country did indeed wake up and realise that the Tories were not the answer. As I said, difficult to tell tone in a text. So we'll come back to your calls on this subject. Going to take a brief break for the news. And coming up immediately after the news, sales of British farm products are down almost 40% since Brexit. We'll be looking at the reality of what leaving the EU has done to our economy and specifically farmers. 0345 6060 973. 10:30 on LBC, the news headlines with Tim Daly.
The Prime Minister has replaced his chief of staff following the resignation of Morgan McSweeney over the Peter Mandelson affair. He's gone over his part in appointing him as the British ambassador to Washington, despite his friendship with the dead paedophile Jeffrey Epstein. Sir Keir Starmer is now expected to address Labour MPs tomorrow. He's also due to speak to the Women's Parliamentary Labour Party on Wednesday after Prime Minister's questions. And police in Lancashire investigating the death of a student say they're holding a 34-year-old man who was known to her. He's been arrested on the suspicion of murder after 19-year-old Carla Georgescu was found in Preston on Thursday. LBC weather, mostly cloudy overnight with outbreaks of rain moving north. Mist and fog could develop in Northern Ireland and also over higher ground elsewhere. We'll see a low of around 6 degrees.
LBC.
When you switch the family's unlimited plans to Vodafone, you save. So while Nan's learning to voice note,
can you hear this? Is this on?
You're saving. While your daughter's setting a new high score on her favourite game.
Get in!
You're saving. While your son's video calling his crush for 3 hours.
I love you more.
You're saving. Save more when you switch your family's plans to Vodafone with Vodafone Together. Eligible plans from the 30th of October. Credit check and terms apply.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Geographical and other restrictions. Minimum spend £60 and charges apply. New customers only. Maximum saving £20 terms at Ocado.com.
At TfL, we're helping make roads safer. We're continuing to roll out lower speed limits because 20 miles per hour roads have already seen 24% fewer collisions causing death or serious injury. We're also improving junctions to help keep you safe and improving visibility for our bus drivers with new wing mirror cameras. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Comparison of collisions data before and after implementation of 20 miles per hour speed limit.
At ulizprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulizprosperity.com.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
So more of your thoughts about Keir Starmer's future, whether he needs a new suit and a glow-up, or careers advice. That's to come, 0345 6060 973. But first, let's talk about farming. Exports of British farm products to the EU have dropped about 40% in the 5 years since Brexit. Analysis of HMRC data by the National Farmers Union shows the decline in sales of everything from British beef to cheddar cheese has dropped about 40% in the 5 years since 2019. That was the last full year before Brexit. Matt Kilcoyne is an independent economist who used to chair the Strategic Trade Advisory Group, and he joins us on the line now. Hello, Matt.
Hello, Nick. How are you doing?
Very well, thanks. So why do you think British farmers have not been able to sell their product to the EU as they used to? What's holding them back?
Well, if I'm honest, it's a bit of both ways. We put up barriers to trade. The EU has put up barriers to trade since we had our breakup. And breakups, obviously, as everybody's going through a relationship knows, you have to leave on good terms. And we don't necessarily have the best of terms with Europe on phytosanitary standards and the things that you check when you send things like sausages and meat overseas. and we've had to increase those because of various bits of legislation. That, now, that necessarily means that some of those goods, either way, are harder to get. But that doesn't mean that they have to be, or that they have to be, or that they have to be in future. And in fact, looking at some of the deals and the negotiations we're doing right now, it looks like they're going to become a little bit easier for our farmers. But it's not just farmers that are facing this, Nick. Actually, the European Union, looking at a whole raft of protectionist measures, including bio-European, bio-procurement standards, which is a massive industry in the UK, $15 billion at least in just procurement, and looking at new rafts of protectionist measures by the EU, which is in breach, frankly, of the UK and EU TCA, the free trade agreement that sits between us.
Yet none of this is what was promised by the people that sold us Brexit, is it?
Well, the people that sold us Brexit were telling us that actually a good relationship breaks on good terms. Anyone, again, who's been through a relationship knows that you leave on good terms, that you leave without people undermining you when you're trying to leave or to break up, that you're leaving with everything sorted, and that you just want to have trade with each other, that you just want to get along, and that you actually want to make sure that there's free flow of basic goods and services, and that we wanted to trade with the rest of the world. That was a fair and honest question that was asked of the British people. It was a fair and honest divergence that the British people went to. But it is a divergence, Nick, and when you have a simple divergence, if the minds of the people aren't made up, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to end up with a very clear trajectory. And that was what was happening with Brexit. We had a 50-50 split in this country, and afterwards we had, you know, certain parts of our elite tried to stop it, but also certain parts of the European elite tried to stop it as well. And that meant that things got a bit muddied, things got a bit muddled. Was it a fair outcome? Was it what people actually wanted? Well, it probably didn't end up as exactly as the Brexiteers wanted it, but they weren't in charge, and that's a fair response to them as well.
Yeah, and since we've not exported our goods as we used to, presumably the Europeans have bought the things that they used to buy from us from somewhere else and have become used to that product.
All substandard products, all worse products, things that aren't as good value, aren't as amazing as British produce is, or that our British financial services, which are the best in the world, or that they've not had access to, you know, some incredible... Like, if they go down the route of their digital sovereignty efforts, then they'll lose access to some of the best technology in the world, sold and made here in Britain, whether that's actually, you know, the deep minds of this world, or the guys from America that sell in from the UK. And cutting your nose off to spite your face, Nick, is never a good idea.
Are you actually wrapped in the flag as we speak? You seem to be peddling British exceptionalism.
Oh, no, not British exceptionalism, Nick. No, not at all. But the partnership, British partnership, that's the sale. That's the message.
Right. So even if we re-enter the market, even if we acknowledge that the best part of breaking up is in the making up, and all the barriers are removed through some magical trade deal, we'll still have to start from scratch, won't we? Because we'll have to persuade European customers to come back to British food, having been used to swapping out what they used to buy from us for something else that may or may not be better or worse. I mean, it's what they will enjoy having now. So we're going to be starting as though from scratch. I mean, that's going to be hard.
It's never from scratch. I mean, what Britain said, really, was it wanted to see other people. And when it said it wanted to see other people, it wanted to basically have an open relationship with, you know, the likes of Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Singapore, the UAE, the fast-growing economies of the world in Asia, as well as our home markets in the Europe and America. That was actually a fairly reasonable option. It's like, but we're not starting from scratch. Absolutely not. Our relationship with Europe is incredibly deep. It's incredibly meaningful. But we wanted free and fair and open competition. That's not a bad thing to ask. Everybody wants free, fair, and truly open competition. Not favoured deals, not, you know, corrupt practices, but free and fair and open competition. And when we get that, that's a world which we all want to see, surely.
Yes, but the response that we got was what you would probably get if you told your spouse that you want to see other people, and can we continue our relationship as it is at the moment?
Well, they want that too. They want to be able to have to trade deals with the rest of the world. They want to have new countries accede, and they want to bully other countries into Europe into following their ways. That's not a good relationship to have with anybody. It was the reason that Britain wanted to leave in the first place. If they have not changed their ways, you don't go back.
But we have to go back. They're closest.
We don't have to do anything. We're Britain. Britain, Nick. We don't have to do anything. We have many friends around the world, including the most fastest growing economies, the most powerful economies in the world. Do we really think we have no choice, no option? This is Britain, Nick. Britain.
I don't know whether you're being serious or not, Matt. This is beginning to sound like a spoof.
It's not. This is deadly serious, Nick. I mean, let's be honest. Britain's not having its best moment. I think that's fair to say for everybody. Everyone's looking around wondering, where is the next leader coming from? Where is the next government? And that's fine. But politics is politics, but policy matters more. The idea that, you know, like, we have the ability to change ourselves matters to people. And that we do, right? The creative ability of the British people, whether it's in our accounting system, whether it's in our media, whether it's in our law, whether it's in our consultancy, whether it's in our manufacturing and advanced manufacturing, biotechnology, our artificial intelligence, is an incredible resource, because British people are the incredible resource, our resilience, our creativity. And if we don't acknowledge that, then we really are in the doldrums.
Okay. I'm still not entirely convinced that this is not satire, but I appreciate your time, Matt. Thanks so much for that. Matt Kilcoyne, independent economist, used to chair the Strategic Trade Advisory Group. Okay. Right, back to the topic that we were having a conversation about before, and that is the future for Keir Starmer, because his right-hand man has gone, and I assume that he is considering his position. Now, he might say that, you know, we finally got rid of that guy, and now we can change course without any, you know, internal wrangling. And perhaps that would be the best thing for the Labour Party. Or do you think that the time is up and they need to change the top man now? 0345 6060973. Cardiff. Hello, David.
Oh, good evening, Nick. Yeah, I think it's quite ironic that what might bring about Starmer's downfall is his cowardly desire to suck up to Trump all the time, which some saw as a strength. He appointed Mandelson because he thought, well, quite rightly, that Mandelson moved in the same shady circles as Trump.
Yes.
And would therefore get on well with him. But now, that seems to be the big scandal that's blowing up in his face.
Well, that's right, but not necessarily because Mandelson was close to Trump. I mean, we wanted somebody who was a Trump whisperer, and to say that Keir Starmer is sort of sucking up to Donald Trump, but that's what's required with that man. Anything else, and Trump will use America as a weapon against you. He requires a constant hosing down of flattery. So it's not really fair to criticise Keir Starmer for doing what anybody would do in his position. There's practically nobody in the world who has actually stood their ground to Donald Trump, because they know what a giant baby he is. It's like you have to tiptoe around him because he is like an infant with a machine gun.
Well, I disagree with you on that point, because people like Carney and Lula in Brazil have stood up to him. If Starmer had the guts to get a bit closer to Europe, Europe could certainly stand up to Trump. I mean, it's just he's got this. He's head office with absolutely ruling out any return to Europe, and therefore his strategy was to suck up to Trump. And I use that language. That's what he's been doing. You look at that day about a year ago when he was in the Oval Office, giving that thickening invite to go and hobnob with the royals.
Yeah.
The following day, what's Trump doing in that very same office? Him and Vance humiliating Zelensky, humiliating him. And that's the person that Starmer, as leader of the United Kingdom, is sucking up to. And I think, Mandelson didn't move in Trump circles, but he was a friend of Epstein, that kind of...
Right. They all know each other, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. And I just, well... Okay, I think Rayner would probably be a better choice as prime minister than Starmer, but they probably won't go to her because she's got unanswered issues over her tax. But Starmer, I agree. I mean, I thought he wasn't the worst of people, but his utter lack of backbone and vision is really, really letting him down. And he'll deserve to be thrown out in disgrace, and I won't have any sympathy for him.
All right, thanks for that, David. 0345 6060 973. No sympathy there. Vivian says the EU is failing. By what measure? Why would you want to go back to a union wanting to take all the power from independent countries? Their stupid open borders is the biggest mistake the EU made, and they are suffering because of it. But because Starmer wants to get back into the EU, so he is keeping our borders open. Starmer needs to resign. He is doing nothing for Britain, says Vivian. Vivian, that message was like X, formerly known as Twitter, throwing up on me. Stratford-upon-Avon. Hello, Jane.
Hi, Nick.
Jane.
Nick, I'm a bit flabbergasted, really, since the programme started. The first guy, a chap called Andrew, that spoke from the left wing of the Labour Party, I think what we have to recognise that in the Conservative Party, they've only got one agenda, and that is to keep taxes low. They don't care about the welfare state. They don't care about the school, state schools. That's their overriding issue. And it has been since Mrs. Thatcher came in 1979. Prior to that, when we had what was called the One Nation Tories, they were different. But the Labour Party is different. It does draw people from different angles. So you will have people on the left, like John McDonnell. I'm not left, I'm right in the middle. But I do like John McDonnell. You know, when he's asked a question, he answers it, you know, he doesn't fudge it, he answers it. There are some decent folk in the Labour Party, but you asked the question whether you thought that Keir Starmer had been unlucky, and I think he really has. I think they've made a lot of mistakes, public errors, you know, silly mistakes, but I don't think he's a bad guy at all. I'd like him to continue in post.
But do you think he's got it, though? Because, you know, since Boris Johnson, then the country's almost yearned for an entertainer. I think that's partly informs Farage's success in the polls. They want a clown on stage, somebody who waves his arms around and gives the crowd a good time.
Well, God help them if they get it, because what happens to, if they do get reform in, what happens to the state schools, the NHS, the roads, you know, what are they going to do? They cut taxes, make poor people poorer and rich people richer. They're not interested in, I hate to use the word socialism because it seems to be a dirty word in this country, but you know that idea where you look out for each other, you care about each other, the children growing up, they can get a good education, they're not sitting in cold, wet, damp homes.
Right. It used to be called patriotism, I think, until patriotism got...
So they've hijacked that, haven't they?
...got redefined to mean a bloke with his bum hanging out and a beer in one hand trying to zip-tie a Union Jack halfway up a lamppost. That apparently is what that means now. Jane, thanks for that. More of your calls on this to come. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
It's a scandal that continues to rip apart the establishment. Peter Mandelson and Andrew Mountbatten Windsor's associations with paedophile Jeffrey Epstein.
We decided that we would part company and I left, I think it was the next day. And to this day, I never had any contact with him.
Very, very deeply indeed, carrying on that association with him.
There were questions asked of the Prime Minister.
Did the official security vetting he received mention Mandelson's ongoing relationship?
Yes, it did.
And of the King.
Charles, are you pressurized? The police is not investigating Andrew.
As Epstein's long-term associate Ghislaine Maxwell is set to testify before US Congress, will the dodgy duo follow suit?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
On your marks, get set, go hybrid. The new Toyota Aygo Cross Hybrid. More oomph than a Friday feeling. And smoother than your last online date. More confidence, more go. In a new hybrid engine with 0% APR representative over 24 months. The new Toyota Aygo Cross Hybrid. Go on. Visit your local Toyota centre. Price from £21,595. Available on Toyota PCP when financed through Toyota Financial Services by 31st March 2026. Optional final payment indemnities may be required. See website conditions apply.
Go on. Leave the never-ending laundry pile. Quiet flat and empty fridge at home. Hop on the train and go into the workplace zone with Southeastern. Whether you're heading in for a change of scene, to share ideas, or enjoy a lunchtime chat with your colleagues, with our great range of tickets, we've got the one to suit your commute. Buy yours now on our app or website and pay no booking fees. So, go on, go in.
Southeastern.
How does a $20 golf gadget end up being used as a bomb detector in war zones worldwide? I'm Alice Levine, and this is Explosive Lies, the podcast exposing a scam that fooled governments and security services across the globe. Open our free Global Player app and search Explosive Lies to start listening today.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
People ask me, what's my good place? Sunday lunch with the whole family. And knowing that because I'm over 55, I can withdraw from my pension pot with a few clicks on the Pension B website. Ollie, are you feeding the dog?
No.
At Pension B, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Go to pensionb.com and be pension confident. When investing, your capital is at risk. Withdrawals available from the age of 55, 57 from 2028.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
So we're talking about Keir Starmer. His right-hand man has just resigned, and I'm asking you what you think that Keir Starmer or the Labour Party should do now. You know, people on the right, the papers in particular, and those who have outsourced their thinking to social media, are calling Keir Starmer's government chaotic, indecisive, unpopular. But compared to what? I mean, do you think that people have easily forgotten how chaotic, indecisive and unpopular the Tory governments of David Cameron, Theresa May, Boris Johnson, Liz Truss and Rishi Sunak were? Gibraltar, hello, Anton.
Hi there, Nick.
Anton.
Hi there, Nick. Good evening. Listen, so what I wanted to say is I think that the current situation in the Labour Party, is it's been a long time coming, and it's you know, I think Keir Starmer has to go. The problem that we've got here is that who's coming in? Rayner. And she's a car crash waiting to happen. And, you know, if Rayner comes in, then you're basically going to be handing it over to reform. And I just don't see how getting rid of Starmer is the solution. However unpopular he is, bringing in Rayner is not going to be the solution, in my opinion.
So it needs somebody else who is in the middle, because they tried out on the left, and right enough, Jeremy Corbyn did collect more votes than Keir Starmer did. It's just a screwed-up political system that gave Keir Starmer this landslide in seats on such a relatively low vote. But and the left didn't turn out that well. The press particularly just had a major cow as soon as they clapped eyes on Jeremy Corbyn. So it's going to have to be somebody else from the centre, do you think?
But there is no centrist in the Labour Party, unfortunately, now. And, you know, I feel that the current Labour Party, you know, Corbyn, he was never centre-left. He was never a traditional Labour MP. You know, even the Tories now, they're not, you know, they were considered on the right. They're no longer on the right. They're centre, very central, even veering towards the left. Hence why you've got so many reform, you know, people moving to reform. And I feel that the country is all you need to do is look at the odds in the bookies. It's a done deal as it stands.
Yeah, but we're not voting as it stands, though, are we? And done deals in politics, you know, they become undone before the ink has dried. I mean, look at the rocket fueled success of the Green Party since Zach took over. It's been absolutely astonishing their success since he hoved into view. Thanks for that, Anton. Daventry, hello, Mike.
Hello, Nick. I think Keir Starmer's been getting a bit of a bad press recently. the Mandelson decision was a calculated risk. And I think if people realised that just prior to the American election, the ambassadorship was up for renewal, and there was a short list of two, neither of which was Mandelson. As soon as Trump came in, then they started looking at Mandelson and I think George Osborne, because they want it was going to be a political appointment rather than a diplomatic one.
Yeah.
And I think if people actually look at what Mandelson did while he was there, they'd be hard pushed to find anything bad. His relationship with Trump was really good. Our relationship with Trump was really good.
Well, his relationship with Trump may have been good because, you know, he's a master of the art of hosing somebody down with flattery, which is what Trump requires more than anything else other than perhaps money.
Yeah, which meant that our relationship with Trump was good.
I suppose so.
We got away with the tariffs.
Not as high a level as others, but he's still tariffing us, which means he's engaging in some sort of economic war with us.
Yeah.
Even though we say we got off lightly.
Well, we did, because he's going to tariff. He tariffed everybody.
Except Russia.
Except Russia, but he had sanctions, apparently. Hmm. Not that he ever used them, but... the other thing is, you know, they say that Starmer's always sucking up to Trump, but they seem to forget that the day after Zelensky was pilloried in the Oval Office,
yeah,
who had him in Britain, walked down the street, put his arm round him,
mm-hmm.
then took him off to see the King. Neither of which actions would have gone down that well with Trump.
And the press was saying exactly that. There was a sharp intake of breath. Oh, should we really be doing this? What's Donald going to say? Yeah.
And then you look at Gaza. We recognise Gaza against the Americans. So again, we've gone against Trump. So we haven't always sucked up to them. We've made decisions.
We didn't prostrate ourselves in front of the man like many others did. Yeah, that is true. Good talking to you, Mike. I'm going to have to move on, but thanks for that. Macclesfield. Hello, Josh.
Hi, Nick. First time caller. I've been listening to your show for, I think, since before 2020.
Oh,
so we've been
thanks.
There.
Thanks.
I got two things to talk about before, like going to my main argument. So first, I thought very briefly about if Starmer should go or should he stay. In my opinion, I think Starmer should really, given to the exceptional circumstances, you know, of hiring someone that has really close relationship with Epstein, it's just egregious. It should really be unforgivable. But at the same time, is that we really haven't had a steady, stable prime minister for the past 10 years, ever since David Cameron has called the referendum in 2016.
It's like we've been addicted to chaos.
Yeah, exactly. And especially for the Conservative Party of simply revolving doors of prime minister all the way from Theresa May and then Boris Johnson and then two unelected prime ministers. And I personally, despite I actually voted for Labour in the regional elections, I'm not part of Keir Starmer, you know, as a left-wing sort of socialist person, but it's kind of relevant because it's really about the future for the country, for the party. And I feel genuinely that the Labour Party, it's at this moment, it needs unity. And it wouldn't really make sense, in my opinion, to throw a prime minister and then having restarting all over again to hoping what prime minister will step in and hoping that, then the next policies will favour for the for the people who actually voted.
At some point, you know, if you're a gambler at a table and you just keep losing and losing and losing, at some point you've got to admit that you're not going to get your money back by continuing to put your money on the table. You just got to take your losses and move on. So, at some point, the Labour Party is going to have to come to terms with the fact, well, not a fact, but the possibility that he's not going to turn things around. That thing, even if it flatlines, it's a disaster. And so, if they are going to change the leader, is it possible that the earlier they do it, the better?
Yep, exactly. And you know, as well, we have to sort of count that it's been 15 years of Tory chaos, mostly in the later 2010s. So, with constant policy changes and especially suspending Parliament during the Brexit sort of vote and leading out to the withdrawal agreement before before the end of January. So that's the thing; it takes time, and especially I'm not saying that Keir Starmer is perfect all round. It has made mistakes.
It does take time, and as I've said many times, that even though he looks like Harry Potter's dad, the man's not a wizard. It was 15 years, pretty much, of the Tories smashing up the place, and he can't fix it in a year, probably not even 5 years. It's unreasonable to expect him to do that. There's a lot of people want to call in on this subject. We're going to take this on after the news, so if you're on the board waiting to speak to me, then I'll take your calls after the news. For Keir Starmer, what should come next? And if the Labour Party do decide to change their leader, who should the next one be? 0345 6060 973. Nick Abbott, LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock. It's believed the Prime Minister hopes to give an update tomorrow on how the government is addressing the issues flagged by the Peter Mandelson affair. His Chief of Staff, Morgan McSweeney, has announced his resignation after accepting responsibility for the appointment of Mr. Mandelson as British Ambassador to Washington, even though his friendship with the paedophile Jeffrey Epstein was known about. Andrew Fisher wrote the Labour Party's manifesto for 2019. He's been telling Nick Abbott on LBC Morgan McSweeney's departure could be good for the government.
I think it's been a mess, and I think this is an opportunity for a reset of the culture of the Labour Party, which has become, I think, as the whole Mandelson scandal suggests, too factional, too narrow, and too deferential to wealth and power as well.
The leader of Reform UK, Nigel Farage, has predicted Sir Keir Starmer will also soon be leaving Downing Street. The Liberal Democrats have responded by saying he bears ultimate responsibility for the Mandelson appointment. Kemi Badenoch's written, it's about time, following Morgan McSweeney's resignation. LBC's Andrew Marr believes the Prime Minister's days are numbered.
I think he's a decent man who came into politics very late in life, comparatively, for the right reasons. But politics is also a very, very hard trade. It requires eloquence. It requires a wily understanding of other people. It requires a vision. And I think he was never remotely a good enough politician to do the job he's been called upon to do.
Peter Mandelson remains under investigation by police over claims he leaked government information to Jeffrey Epstein. He denies any wrongdoing. Young people who narrowly miss out on apprenticeships are being promised new help by the government. It says they'll be matched with similar opportunities under a pilot scheme which will run in partnership with employers and other agencies. And a think tank is warning hundreds of thousands of people struggle to find paid work because of their own caring responsibilities. The Resolution Foundation is calling for more support for full-time carers. Kirsty McHugh at the Carers Trust has been telling LBC existing help from the state is not good enough.
I'm afraid the carer's allowance is a Cinderella benefit. It really is. So it's £83.30 a week at the moment, but it has very complicated eligibility. So the person you're caring for has to be on personal independence payment, and a variety of other things apply as well.
The government says it's delivered the biggest ever cash increase in the earnings threshold for the carer's allowance. LBC weather, mostly cloudy overnight with outbreaks of rain, which will gradually move northwards. Mist and fog could develop in Northern Ireland, and also over higher ground elsewhere. We'll see a low of around 6 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Tim Daly.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Abbott.
We are talking about Keir Starmer. His right-hand man has left Downing Street, and Keir Starmer has appointed a temporary duo to take over in the meantime before a permanent replacement is found. But do you think a permanent replacement should be found for Keir Starmer? 0345 6060 973. And if you do think the latter, then who should it be? And when would be a good time to change? Does it have to happen right now because of the forthcoming elections and all the chaos that that's going to sort of throw into that mix, make the party seem even less on an even keel? Or should they wait until after that? Is that going to make it too late to start to sort of bed in before the general election? Many issues and conundrums. Tottenham. Hello, Joseph.
Hello, good evening, Nick. How are you doing?
Good, thanks.
Yeah, first time caller.
Ah, good man.
I would like to talk about, I think Keir Starmer is a decent man. I've been working in the private sector and the NHS for 26 years. This year would make 27 years. And of all these years, I've never come across one prime minister who have tried to do anything in regard to the NHS. The NHS, it's coming down. It's coming down slowly, but surely it's coming down. He's trying his level best. He's rolling out things.
When you say it's coming down, what do you mean by that?
Okay, in the corridors. My heart, even my own heart bleeds to see, you know, people have to be getting help in the corridors. But you can see it's getting less, and it's coming down slowly. Even one of your own colleagues said that they can see it as well coming down, you know, in their part of the country where they're living.
You mean getting better?
Getting better,
right,
sorry,
okay.
Getting
yeah,
better.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I mean, it's only when the kitchen can feel the heat, as the traditional saying would be. He's trying his best. Yes, he's made mistakes, and anybody else who goes there, they would make mistakes, and they would do U-turns. And, you know, yes, he has done quite a few U-turns and whatever, but give the man a chance. I don't think he can fix all the problems that we have in this country in 1 year and 6 months.
But do you think that he is he's not the kind of person now that we have become used to being our leader in this country? Because it seems to me that the wide shadow of Boris Johnson is still falling over Downing Street, that we still hanker after a performer, and that's not who Keir Starmer is.
Yes, I understand that, but you know, I still think give him a chance. It does. If they were to vote him out and they get somebody else in, they're still not going to do it faster than how he's doing it in one year and 6 months. And you know, everybody needs a chance. Give him a chance, even one term to see. You know, give him a chance to try his best to see what's going on. I mean, you know. This man is looking about every single person's family in this country in terms of the health care and whatever it is. And it's only when we realize or we have to miss our loved ones, we're saying this and we're saying that. Give him a chance. Let him try and see what he can do. And, you know, over a period of time, he cannot fix everything. He went in there and made all this thing that is going on.
All right.
I think
okay.
He should be giving him a chance.
Okay. Got it. Thanks, Joseph. This is Starmer saying that we owe McSweeney a debt of gratitude shows exactly where Starmer's loyalties lay, not with the voting public, but only with the people he surrounds himself with. I think we're all sick of constantly being disregarded, says Paul. I'm not entirely sure that that's fair. I mean, saying that the man who's just lost his career and is leaving the building, that he owes him a debt of gratitude, doesn't seem unreasonable. And the one does not mean that he only cares about the people he surrounds himself with. I'm not sure I agree with any of that, Paul. Croydon. Hello, Tom.
Yeah. I'm going to take a slightly different pitch to the previous caller who said that Starmer was a decent man. I don't think we should care whether he's a decent man, whether he takes his wife out for a lovely meal on Valentine's Day. What we need to matter about is whether he has the ability to sort of change society for the better.
Yeah.
And I think he's essentially... I'm going to be gentle here, but he's a bit of a spineless beige balloon in a room of empty people, right? Who doesn't really have an ideology that drives him passionately, right? And I think ultimately what Starmer's problem is that he's made some poor judgments that have had huge consequences, right? So he cozied up to Trump, and I kind of get the rational kind of understanding there. Like, we've got a bully, we need to keep the bully close to us.
Yeah.
But as soon as it was clear that that was an irrational decision because the bully kept bullying us, he stuck with it, right?
But what's the option? Because if you pick a fight with Donald Trump, he will spend the rest of his life trying to get back at you, and he has the biggest club in the world. Mm. He uses America as a weapon. So I think it's a bit unfair to criticise somebody for not trying to poke the bear.
I get it. But I genuinely think the vast majority of this country have a sense of, like ethics being important. And, you know, we get the sort of macroeconomics, we get why it's complicated, but it's embarrassing to watch our Prime Minister sacrifice his ethics on Gaza, on the economy, on Trump. You know, this is a fascistic leader, right, who is destroying the world. Like, it shouldn't be that difficult for him to take at least a semi-hard line on what's right and what's wrong in the world.
But if that's what the majority of the people think, then explain Nigel Farage's current popularity, because there isn't a single politician in this country who is more closely associated with Donald Trump.
Yep. Well, that was the second point I was going to come on to, right, is I think his second massive misjudgment is that the country is still hungry for a centrist political ecosystem. Actually, Farage has got it right. Like, we are in a multipolar world, which is why he's latching on to people who are desperately frustrated with the inadequacy of centrist politics. The left has missed the mark. They're sticking in the center. They think that the status quo is going to go. Right? They force Corbyn out of the picture, and anything that's further left of Starmer is considered radical. Right? That is the wrong approach. People are frustrated. They're thirsty for change. And I think people who are prepared to say the things that have not been said for many years, that is the antidote to Farage, and that is hopefully a positive solution in society that provides, like, equity in the economy and society.
So do you think that Keir Starmer has actually been too tremulous, too fritz
100%.
Of being a radical alternative? He just wanted to sort of smoothly fade from the Tories into something that was not that different, but just better.
100%. I think he fed off of the fact that the Tories were so horrifically awful that anything he said was going to be
Whether it was enthusiastic.
Anything he said or suggested was going to be better.
Right.
And
he actually
has to go further than that.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, but it's also odd that you know, it's not just Farage, but the party is now a collection of defected Tories. It's extraordinary,
You've heard about rats jumping ship, haven't you?
Well, yes, of course. I mean, I'm sure that most of their decision-making was based on continuing to monetize their position. Where's the money going to be? But it just seems extraordinary to me that the party that you are full of the people that you used to hate when they were wearing a dark blue rosette, now they've changed to a light blue rosette. People are giving them a standing ovation. I just don't get it. But thanks for that, Tom. 0345 6060 973. This text says, no, of course Keir Starmer should not resign. Can I just remind everyone that no one actually died or was even seriously inconvenienced as a result of Mandelson's appointment, says Nigel in Greenwich. Westminster, Hassan.
Hi, Nick. Nick, I think Starmer will resign. I'll give you a date. It will be the 27th of February, 2026. As soon as the results from the Gorton and Denton by-election come through, we expect Labour to come third. It's an entirely self-inflicted wound by Starmer because he blocked Andy Burnham to save his own skin. And I think that will be the straw. I think the vultures in the Labour Party have been circling around him for a while. And I think he thoroughly deserves it. I think he's been a deeply duplicitous politician who has been in his... He was the leader of the opposition for 5 years. He did no preparation. He walked in thinking that he'll somehow fix things. And people have lost patience with him, rightly so. Because it's not about... he's only had 18 months. He is heading the ship in the wrong direction. And that's why we need a change. And that change has to come... I think it has to be a complete sort of removal of some of the Mandelson acolytes in the Labour Party. And it's not just McSweeney, it's West Treating, and it's many others who have built their career on Mandelson-style politics for the past 40 years. This is the right wing of the Labour Party, which has been extremely poisonous towards the rank and file in the Labour Party. They've overseen a diminishment of the Labour Party. It used to have 600,000 members. Now they're down to 250,000 members. And these people have to be driven out from the Labour Party for it to be rescued as a party of the working class.
Yes, but the number of members you have as a party is neither here nor there, really. It's how many people can you persuade to go to the voting booth and put a cross in the box next to your name. And the Labour Party, you know, of all stripes since the Second World War, there's been some, you know, quite left-leaning, and there's been quite some centrists, there's been entertainers, there's been very, very dull functionaries. Yeah. They have lost to the Conservative Party, which was the only right-wing choice during that period, almost two-thirds of the time. So, you know, there's something about the left, which is, I mean, you could say that most of the Labour parties, the Labour governments have been to the left of this current Keir Starmer one. There's something about that that the British public just doesn't want to vote for.
No, no, I think there is an issue around fragmentation of the progressive vote, right? That they are split. You have Lib Dems, you have Labour, etc., while the Tories have always been very careful about maintaining the vote. I think the 2024 election was not a Starmer victory. It was a catastrophic Tory defeat.
Yeah.
Where and Starmer's victory was incredibly loveless. I mean, he won it with only 34% of the vote.
Mm-hmm.
And he had 2 million less votes than what Jeremy Corbyn had achieved. Right. So in 2017. So and it's really the number of votes matter, and not just the MPs, because if it wasn't for the number of votes, Starmer would not have been afflicted with such a dire situation. The reality is Starmer has lost the support of the Labour voters and also others. Even if you look at Boris Johnson, the clown that he was, he still had a core Tory vote that would vote for him. Similarly, Corbyn, whatever mudslinging you might do to him, he had a core vote. Trump has a core vote. Starmer has nothing because he doesn't appeal to anyone, and it's time for him to go.
All right, good talking to you, Hassan. Thanks for that. 0345 6060 973. I read these stats out last night on my Cilia show. People are talking about it's a very, very unpopular government. Keir Starmer, more unpopular than all the other major leaders. That's true enough. There's polling that suggests that this is the most unpopular government that this country has ever seen. According to current YouGov figures, government approval sits at 66% disapproval. But it's been that way for the past 15 years. In May 2012, when David Cameron was Prime Minister, the disapproval rate of the government was 61%. Remember, it's 66% now with Keir Starmer. David Cameron had 61% disapproval. In July 2016, when it was Theresa May as Prime Minister, disapproval was at 61%. In July 2019, when Boris Johnson was in power, disapproval was at 71%. In October 2022, when Liz Truss was Prime Minister, disapproval was at 77%. In January 2023, when Rishi Sunak was the Prime Minister, disapproval was at 68%. And now with Keir Starmer, it's 66%. So he's kind of there or thereabouts for all of the leaders of the last 15 years. 0345 6060 973. What are your thoughts on what he should do next, or what the Labour Party apparatchiks should do for him? You can text 84850, email nicka@lbc.co.uk. If you're on WhatsApp, it's the same number as the phone, 0345 6060 973.
This is LBC.
Combine your pensions with Pension B and take control of your retirement. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Geographical and other restrictions. Minimum spend £60 and charges apply. New customers only. Maximum saving £20. Terms at Ocado.com.
Sunlight's guaranteed over 50 plan. Gave confidence to Jane and Chris. With their insurance sorted, they're becoming Nick lecherous, cutting loose in their birthday suits, feeling elegant and free. But when they answered the door, the postman saw more than he expected to see. Sunlight, a little confidence goes a long way. No medical questions and a cash payout. Search Sunlight Cover today.
Premiums paid could exceed the payout. Full cover after 1 year. Ages 49 to 85.
Hiya, Kenny the Hamster here. Proud pet of Doug and Carol. Hey up. Looks like my mum Carol's off out with the girls again. I tell you, since she took that quick NHS Healthy Choices quiz, she's drinking less, but going out more. And to think, she thought being healthy would mean being boring. You might want to give it a go yourself.
Go, girlfriend!
Take your first little step to healthy. Search NHS Healthy Choices quiz to get a score and a simple plan to follow.
This is LBC with Nick Abbott.
We are metaphorically deciding Keir Starmer's fate. What do you think should happen next? Should he dust himself down, brush himself off and start all over again, or however that song goes? Or should he step aside for somebody who may have better luck, who may come across on the TV better, who may be more social media friendly? Somebody who could actually turn those unpopularity numbers around. Bath, John.
Hi, Nick. How are you?
Good, thanks.
You know, I despair sometimes. I mean, we've spoken a few times, so I'm not defending one person one way or another, one political leaning, but, I mean, is there some kind of a collective insanity that's going on in this country? Because I don't understand how somebody can sit and go through 14 years of what we've gone through, and then say, well, you know, Keir Starmer's to blame for this, he's to blame for that, he's to blame for this. Do you remember, I'm sure you do, before Labour got in, the conservative trope was, if you can't trust the Labour Party, they will bankrupt the country. Within 5 seconds, the country's going to go bankrupt. Mm. So Keir Starmer then sits down, he talks to the banks, he talks to the finances, and then he tries to cut back on when he realises how in debt we are as a country, makes a few mistakes, for instance, like the business with the winter fuel allowance and whatever it is, but then apologises, and apparently we wanted our politicians to apologise, but then when he does, he's just a U-turn.
Yes, well, we want them to reconsider when whatever they do or say is unpopular, and then we criticise them for reconsidering.
Yeah, and this is the thing, and I just think, you know, they are heading for a nervous breakdown. They need to pull themselves to pieces, because it's just, I don't understand, do you not see where this is? You know, you mentioned earlier on, rip it up and start again. Yeah. They think they can rip it up and start again. This is like last chance salute. If they self-fire on their circular firing squad, we're going to end up with Farage. You know, and the thing is, you know, the guy that rang up, I don't know, was his name Maurice or Morris?
Yeah.
When he's moaning about his MP being 24 years of age. Does he forget how old the people flying Spitfires were in the Battle of Britain?
Right. Well, I was trying to come up with something like that, and I was thinking, how old was Einstein when he came up with the theory of relativity?
What was it?
And I can't recall, so I didn't say anything.
You're right. He was quite a young man. But yeah. The thing is, I mean, you know, like Boris, I think he said he was 80, so he's a baby boomer. So I don't think he's ever, like, you know, flown a plane to defend his nation, but somehow being 24 or 22 disqualifies his MP.
Well, you know, to be fair, flying a Spitfire is a very specific skill, which is probably best done by someone who is young, but the job of being an MP does require, I think would benefit from a certain amount of life experience. So I kind of get what he's saying. But with old age does not necessarily come wisdom.
Yeah, I mean, he expected an accolade because he said he was 80-something.
Yeah.
But what I don't understand is, who was the fellow you spoke to that seemed like he was... it was like a Britain kind of... it was like he was some kind of a spoof thing about where Britain...
It was like listening to God Save the Queen without the music. It was Matt Kilcoyne, an independent economist who used to chair the Strategic Trade Advisory Group.
Well, I'd like some of what he's on. because I honestly don't... This is how we got into this mess. We all jumped off the White Cliffs of Dover like lemmings, right? Believing... I mean, I didn't vote Brexit, but all of these people believed all the hot air that was coming out of Rees-Mogg and Nigel Farage.
Yeah. They still do. They still do. It's like they're all in. They've replaced their belief system with whatever Nigel Farage has said most recently, and it's like a cult, really. It's sort of what is going on in America at the moment.
And to be honest, Nick, you know when Kenneth Clark said he and I agree with him actually. He doesn't believe in referendi, and the problem is if you ask the majority of people what they think on any issue, right, we would be really down the creek without a paddle. We'd have death penalty back, we'd have ice on our streets.
Well, if you ask people what they want, I mean, famously, if you ask if you ask a cowboy, does he want a car, he'll say, no, I want a faster horse.
Indeed. Well, this is the problem. We can't. There's no reasoning. They'll complain when they're in the mess that they're in. We didn't vote for this. Like people who didn't vote for ICE to have them thrown out of their own country. They complain afterwards, like it's like a, you know, we didn't know what we were voting for. We know you didn't.
All right, good talking to you, John. Thanks for that. 0345 606 0973. Jay says, it's got to be after the midterms. You can't do it before the midterms. There's not enough time for a new candidate or a new leader to cement their popularity among the people. You've got to let Starmer ride it out. We've still got a while before the next general election for somebody like Burnham or Angela Rayner to make a dent in Nigel Farage leading the polls, says Jay. Yeah, timing is everything, isn't it? You can't do it too soon, and neither can you do it too late. Is now the very time. 0345 606 0973. Let's see. Cumbran. Hello, Philip.
Hello, Nick. If I could give you a brief history lesson, and ironically, I can't think of his name now. What's the name of the chap that's just...
Morgan McSweeney. Him.
No, the other... I'm having a brain...
Keir Starmer?
No.
Donald Trump.
the ex-ambassador.
Oh, Mandelson.
Yeah, Mandelson. Now, I can remember the Labour Party in the 80s, led by a very inadequate man, Michael Foot. The Labour Party was split, full of left-wing extremists, and Neil Kinnock stood up at the Labour Party conference and faced down these extremists. There was one based in Liverpool. I can't think of his name.
Yeah,
but and Neil Robo. Kinnock faced them down. Now, ironically, Mandelson, ironically, did bring the Labour Party back to a more central, electable position.
Yeah, with Tony Blair.
That's right. And, you know, it's a tragedy, really, that this man has fallen foul to his, all these things. Now, the Labour Party was made electable. It was made more centrist. And that's a brief history lesson that, you know, don't forget your history.
Yes, well, Tony Blair, probably the most successful Prime Minister, certainly lasted longer than any other Labour Prime Minister, as far as I'm aware. I'm no expert on history or any other subject for that matter. And he's about as centrist as you could get. And it seemed as though Keir Starmer was sort of in that mould. Which, you know, and if you were going to ape anyone, then, the Iraq war aside, then Tony Blair would probably be the one that you would look to, to aping, for want of a better word.
Yeah, the Iraq war, unfortunately, was Tony Blair's a nemesis. But another bit of history, you had a very popular Winston Churchill. I know it was the Second World War. He was an orator. He was a larger-than-life figure. And at the end of the Second World War, the British people voted him out and put in the Labour government led by Clement Attlee, a very quiet man, a different character altogether to Winston Churchill. And Starmer is a quiet man. He's not like the buffoon Boris and all these other idiots. Now, that Labour government under a quiet man achieved a lot. They brought the health service. They brought other things. So, you know, I would prefer Starmer is the least worst of all the options we've got. Never forget. Never, never, never forget. Brexit was the biggest balls up, excuse my French, that this country's ever gone through. We should never forget it. And we don't want to go back to the party that brought all that in. And if this Labour government does go, we got Farage, we got all the others. One thing that I'm pleased about, this government has tried to get relations improved with Europe. Now, I would like us to go back in. I would like us to join a customs union. Now, Starmer says that isn't going to happen. Mm. But he has got closer to Europe. Looking at the big picture, he has got, which I think is good.
Yes.
If and, we get the Tories or the other lot in, they're going to tear that up.
Yes. And what's odd to me is that all of the polls show that it would be wildly popular to at the very least, re-establish close bosom buddy relations with the European Union. Mm. A small minority now still cling to the idea that we're better off outside. So it just seems bizarre to me that a politician in want of something to do that is popular refuses this open goal. I just don't get it.
Yeah.
All right, good talking to you, Philip. Thanks for that. More of your calls on this to come. Let me just read a couple of texts and we'll go for the news. This says, John McDonnell would be an inspired choice for Starmer to be his chief of staff, says Graham. Archie says, I feel a lot of people have given up on politics and they know what's coming down the road, Farage, and dreading it, says Archie. Well, if that's what a lot of people are dreading, then this is not a time to give up on politics. And it is absolutely, totally and completely not a time to give up on voting. Nothing has been written. It's not been set in stone. Anything could happen in the next 5 minutes. 03456060973. Going to take a break for the news. Come back for more of your calls. But immediately after the news, we're going to be talking about Andy Burnham and his bid for the 2040 Olympics to be held in the north of England. 11:30 on LBC, the news headlines with Tim Daly.
It's believed the Prime Minister hopes to give an update tomorrow on how the government's addressing issues flagged by the Peter Mandelson affair. His Chief of Staff, Morgan McSweeney, has resigned after accepting responsibility for the appointment of Mr. Mandelson as British Ambassador to Washington. The leader of Reform UK, Nigel Farage, has predicted Sir Keir Starmer will also soon be leaving Downing Street. Kemi Badenoch's written, "It's about time," following Morgan McSweeney's resignation. And young people who narrowly miss out on apprenticeships are being promised new help by the government. It says they'll be matched with similar opportunities under a pilot scheme. LBC weather, mostly cloudy overnight with outbreaks of rain, which will move northwards. Mist and fog could develop in Northern Ireland and also over high ground elsewhere. We'll see a low of around 6 degrees.
This is LBC.
When it comes to retirement advice, the last thing you want is to be put in a bucket. Seen as this type of person, or that type of person. At Fisher Investments UK, we never put you in a bucket. We always tailor retirement advice that's just right for you. Fisher Investments UK, retirement advice that's as individual as you are. Learn more at fisherinvestments.co.uk. Investing involves the risk of loss. Fisher Investments UK is regulated by the UK Financial Conduct Authority.
Come on, quick, we have to run.
Wait, what? Run to where?
The mini sale event. Keep up.
What? Huh?
The mini sale event. Savings across the range, even on the iconic Mini Cooper.
Whoa!
And that's on top of all existing offers.
Right, let's pick up the pace.
The mini sale event. Amazing offers to act fast on. 5th to the 9th of February at your local mini retailer. Applicable on new mini orders placed during the sale event and registered by the 30th of June 2026. Visit mini.co.uk/sale event.
Okay, done. Move that. And, oh, new ways to invest.
Okay.
Foolproof guaranteed returns. Invest today.
All right, I think I will.
Way before you seal the deal, check if it's real and if a company's authorised by the FCA.
Oh, thanks.
Search FCA Firm Checker.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
The north of England is seeking to host the Olympic and Paralympic Games to boost a region which has been described of left out of the national story. Northern leaders have written to the Culture Secretary, Lisa Nandy, urging the government to back a multi-city games spanning an area with a population of 15 million people. Now, the London mayor says he wants the capital, London, to bid for the Olympics in 2040. Andy Burnham, the Greater Manchester mayor, said it wouldn't be fair or right for London to host the games for a fourth time. Let's talk about this with Professor Ellis Cashmore. Professor Cashmore is an honorary professor of sociology at Aston University and joins us on the line now. Good evening, Professor.
Hello, Nick.
So, what do you make of this? Which mayor are you on the side of, Andy Burnham or Sadiq Khan?
I'm calling this a no-score draw. I don't think either of them are going to get it. And I think Andy Burnham's bid is a bit of a tit-for-tat type of thing. It's largely symbolic, you know, Nick. Neither one of them, I think, has really costed this ad. They're enormously expensive to host Olympic Games nowadays. Enormously. And that cost is passed on to the taxpayer, the local taxpayer. So, and they never pay for themselves. The last instance we had of this was in Birmingham, where I live, by the way, Commonwealth Games. It virtually bankrupted the city. And although they said later, oh, it wasn't solely attributable to the games, it was in large part due to that, you know. These things are very, very expensive, and by the 2040, they'll even be even more expensive than they are. So I think that this is largely symbolic. You know, Andy Burnham, he's got a case. I mean, he's saying the Northwest is largely ignored when it comes to London. So we want to put ourselves on the map, and we want to show that we're competitive, and we could stage a game, theoretically, in any case. But in practical terms, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, in practical terms, I was wondering how all of the people would get into these cities in the north. I mean, with HS2 either cancelled or delayed.
Another good one. Yeah.
Absolutely no end in sight. How would the world get to Hull and Wigan and Manchester?
Yes, they really haven't figured it all out, have they? They're just, as I say, it's symbolic. It's, you know, Sadiq Khan's done it. Okay, we'll have a go at it as well. They're staking a claim, but nobody's thought it through. And, you know, frankly, they're pipe dreams. But they make good stories, and they keep Andy Burnham in the news, and they show that he's a guy with guts, and he's, you know, you can't put him down easily. Okay, he's got rejected a couple of weeks ago. But he'll come back fighting, and he'll keep doing it, and he'll show himself to be a man of pluck.
But many governments have talked about levelling up, haven't they? They're spending more money outside of the southeast, and there's enormous justification for doing that, and people in the north are also justified in thinking that they have been left behind.
I agree, Nick, but this isn't the way of levelling up. This is a way of leveling down, because they're so expensive, these games nowadays. You know, big athletics meetings or big football tournaments, or, you know, they are not gifts from heaven. They don't just land and people say, oh, how wonderful. Think of all the kudos we're getting. There's a lot, quite apart from a lot of hard graft goes into it, it's money. And it's council taxpayers' money that will make these pipe dreams come true, if ever they do. So they're costly events, and they're very, very rarely break even, which is why they have such great difficulty selling these events nowadays. Look at the Commonwealth Games after Birmingham. Nobody wanted them. And now they're finding that Glasgow has at long last agreed to put on a Commonwealth Games, but it's a very slimmed-down version, and they're not going big into it.
Well, do you think that if London gave up the idea of hosting the Games, that we could fund the Games for the North, and by that method, they would be able to, you know, do something about the
First of all, let me interrupt you. Yeah. Who's we? I'm a UK taxpayer. I don't want to be paying for it. Let's put it that way. So when you say we, you mean the council taxpayers of Greater Manchester?
Well, all of us, I suppose.
But it's for the vote, I bet you. I know what they'd say.
Well, everybody says that they don't want to pay more tax, but they want the nice things that tax brings them.
Of course they do, yeah, yeah. And I'm sure that they'd say, would you like the Olympic Games? Great, thank you very much, we'll take them. Oh, by the way, this is going to cost you approximately an extra £1,000 a year on your council tax. Still interested? I don't think so.
The HS2 was an up-and-down train system, wasn't it? Which was basically connecting, basically making it easier to get to London from the north. What about, what do the locals there think of their own transport system, which is...
Well, in the Midlands, you're talking about.
Well, yes. It's easy to get north to south, but it's very difficult to get from west to east. Surely the money should have been better spent there.
Well, just talking to people, that's not the consideration, Nick. When I talk to people about HS2, people say, how much is it to get to London from Birmingham now? And I said, well, you know, it's a puzzling kind of thing. There are all kinds of ticketing and options that you can have, but it ain't cheap, let's put it that way. And they say, how much will it be on HS2 then? If people are complaining about the prices of train tickets now, what on earth will they be doing when HS2 comes into motion? This is looking like a Concorde situation all over again, where people love the idea, they admire the beauty, they take great pride in the eventual product, but they can't afford to use it. And I think that's the conclusion people reach when it comes to HS2. Nice idea, but will we ever be able to afford the tickets on it?
Andy Burnham has had a lot of publicity lately, and comes on the back of him being the mayor of Greater Manchester.
Yeah.
How do you think the devolving of power has affected the lives of people in the north?
Well, I think they're probably quite grateful, because I think he's quite a popular guy up there, and they think he's doing quite a decent job, and so they're probably glad that he's still at the helm in Greater Manchester, and they haven't lost him to, you know, a seat in Parliament. So I think he's an appreciated guy at the moment, and I think he's capitalising on that by making a gesture such as this. And I think that's all it is, by the way, Nick, a gesture, is saying that, you know, Sadiq Khan can do it, then so can we. You know, we can punch our weight with London. And I'm just showing the people of Greater Manchester that we're up there. And, you know, this is an area of equal rank to London, and we deserve to be in, at least in the running, when it comes to hosting great sporting spectacular events such as this. When it comes down to brass tacks, I think it's a different matter, though.
Very good to talk to you, Professor. Thanks so much for that. That is
my pleasure.
Professor Ellis Cashmore, Honorary Professor of Sociology at Aston University. Still to come this evening, we are going to check in with our US correspondent, the very excellent Simon Marks. We will also have a weather update to find out if it will ever stop raining. But now let's go back to your calls about Keir Starmer's current travails. His right-hand man is gone, and I'm asking you whether you think that he should go too, or whether, after such a relatively brief period of trying to fix a country that had been smashed to bits for 14 years by the Conservative Party, it's unreasonable to expect that everything is significantly better by now. And perhaps the man should continue, trying to effect a change. Berkhamsted. Hello, Linda.
Hi, Nick. I just wanted to say I fully support Keir. I think everything he's done since they've got in, and they've done a lot, but it's never acknowledged anywhere. All people ever ring up is to moan, moan, moan. I think he's done a lot. He was given a poison chalice. And I think those left-wingers who are trying to drag him down ought to remember it was the voting people who put him there. And I'm a Labour Party member, and I will go out again when it comes round for Labour, because the alternative, Nigel Farage and all the despicable policies, only giving people with three children the extra child money if they are British. It, you know, and if people want that, then be it on their head, because I think you'll need to do 7 nights a week when it happens.
The thing is, though, I mean, if the scenario that you just laid out, is it possible that it would be more likely with Keir Starmer, as unpopular as he is, you know, regardless of what he has achieved, the people just don't hear it, and they don't see it, and they don't look it up, and they so they just don't feel it. So it's possible that people only get really one chance to present themselves to the public. Now, the public either like them or they don't like them. And they're not going to be browbeaten into liking them if at first they are, you know, unimpressed. So maybe he should, or the Labour Party should, cut its losses and just try something else. Because if they keep going down this road, then they're not going to win. They're not going to win a council election, never mind about the general election.
But if their own people go against him and are talking to journalists and rubbishing him, why don't they wait? They've got 3 years yet, more than 3 years.
But that's the key, isn't it? They don't want to wait until 3 years and potentially lose their...
Well, no, you haven't got to wait 3 years, but let all this all settle down. Because if they think Nigel Farage is going to up the welfare bill, see that everyone's all right on the NHS, all the things that people just ring in and complain about all the time, they've got another thing coming.
All right.
I think, personally, that there'll be mighty unrest in this country if Nigel Farage gets in.
All right. Thanks a lot, Linda. 0345 6060 973. This message from Richard says, I'm so tired of listening to these fanatic socialists looking for their new messiah. Andy Burnham is not the messiah. And I think you know how the rest of that sentence goes. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
It's a scandal that continues to rip apart the establishment. Peter Mandelson and Andrew Mountbatten Windsor's associations with paedophile Jeffrey Epstein.
We decided that we would part company and I left, I think it was the next day. And to this day, I never had any contact with him.
Very, very deeply indeed, carrying on that association with him.
There were questions asked of the Prime Minister.
Did the official security vetting he received mention Mandelson's ongoing relationship?
Yes, it did.
And of the King.
Charles! Charles! Are you pressurised? The police is not investigating Andrew!
As Epstein's long-term associate Ghislaine Maxwell is set to testify before US Congress, will the dodgy duo follow suit?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Go on. Leave the never-ending laundry pile. Quiet flat. And empty fridge at home. Hop on the train and go into the workplace zone with Southeastern. Whether you're heading in for a change of scene, to share ideas, or enjoy a lunchtime chat with your colleagues, with our great range of tickets, we've got the one to suit your commute. Buy yours now on our app or website and pay no booking fees. So, go on, go in.
Southeastern.
Idle money chills in your current account, parked in front of the telly, wanting a snack, yet too lazy to move. But thanks to Monzo, busy money got up early, automatically split your paycheck into pots, rounded up your purchases into savings, invested your interest into ISAs, oh, and has already written itself a to-do list for tomorrow. Monzo, the bank that gets your money moving. UK residents aged 18 plus, Monzo personal account required, capital at risk, T's and C's and fees may apply.
Come on, quick, we have to run.
Wait, what? Run to where?
The mini sale event. Keep up.
What? Huh?
The mini sale event. Savings across the range, even on the iconic Mini Cooper.
Whoa!
And that's on top of all existing offers.
Right, let's pick up the pace.
The mini sale event. Amazing offers to act fast on. 5th to the 9th of February at your local mini retailer. Applicable on new mini orders placed during the sale event and registered by the 30th of June 2026. Visit mini.co.uk/sale event.
When you switch the family's unlimited plans to Vodafone, you save. So while Nan's learning to voice note,
can you hear this? Is this on?
You're saving. While your daughter's setting a new high score on her favourite game.
Get in!
You're saving. While your son's video calling his crush for 3 hours.
I love you more.
You're saving. Save more when you switch your family's plans to Vodafone. With Vodafone together. Eligible plans from the 30th of October. Credit check and terms apply.
Nick Abbott on LBC. BBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Yes, the number 0345 6060 973. We are talking about Keir Starmer. He's lost his right-hand man. Should the Labour Party move to oust Keir Starmer, or should they do the unexpected and actually come together as one and, paddle in the same direction? Newcastle, Chandra.
Very good evening, Nick.
Yes, sir.
Thanks for taking my call. It's a bit... I mean, you usually are in your chirpier and more sarcastic mode, but you are more somber this evening. It's understandable, the occasion is as such.
Well, I'm not feeling somber, but I do two different types of show. Friday and Saturday is not like tonight. Sunday is the more sort of format show. Friday and Saturday is me acting the clown.
Oh, sorry. I've usually heard... My
clown
apologies.
Shows.
Anyway, the point I was trying to make was, if the choice is between Mr. Potash, Fagash, as you call him, and Keir Starmer, or Ms. Badenoff or Keir Starmer, I will always want Keir Starmer. But it's been an extraordinary misstep from Keir Starmer. I mean,
what has?
If he had known that Pete Mandelson has had contact with Jeffrey Epstein after his conviction, then I think it's for one of the leading lawyers of his generation, for him to not see the pitfalls of that action is a major, major misstep for me. However, he can redeem himself, and he has to see this as a contact sport. And this is he simply acting honorably is not enough. He has to show passion. He really has to show that he's fighting for himself and fighting for the nation. Because if we need a strong leader right at this moment.
But is that who he is? He's not a passionate person. He doesn't come across as somebody who has a passing relationship with the word passion.
No, but this is the most... Everybody can draw into the depths of their beings and draw out that passion. This is the most significant moment in his life and in his entire family's life for several decades to come. If at this moment he cannot reach into his passionate self, when would he ever? And why will I stand in solidarity with a leader who cannot defend himself, who cannot fight for himself? He needs to fight for himself, because if he doesn't fight now, there is no credible contest from Labour Party at the moment because of the circumstances. He is the leader, and he needs to show leadership.
He needs to shed his skin, essentially. He needs to come out like a butterfly from this dull suit that he's wearing.
He needs to come out as a raging bull.
Right.
And he needs to demonstrate his ability to fight for himself, and the fact that he genuinely cares for working class and ordinary citizens of this country. And he needs to defeat the case he made last year in a more passionate...
Oh, we're losing you, Chandra. Please speak directly into the phone.
Hello. Is this better?
No. Somehow it got worse. You're getting fainter. There you are.
Okay. It's the network reception where I am at the moment.
Yeah.
The point I'm trying to make is that if it's now or never, not just for Keir Starmer, but for the fate of Labour Party for decades to come.
All right. Very good talking to you, Chandra. Thanks for that. Andrew in Dundee says, there's a lot of talk about Keir Starmer supposedly lacking personality or not being popular. But I think we've drifted into judging political leaders the way we judge entertainers, as if they're meant to be showmen or performers. we focus on charisma, catchphrases, and how they come across, instead of looking at what they actually do for the country. Maybe the problem isn't the politicians' personalities, but the fact that we started treating politics like a talent show. I agree 100%. Yes. And the rot started with Boris Johnson. And I still feel that people, that there's a certain element in this country that yearns for a return of that man. The phrase of the day used to be, for almost the entire time that he was in office, leave him alone, he's doing his best. And they gave him a pass like no other politician that has ever had office in this country. Regardless of what a catastrophe he turned out to embody on any given day, people were prepared to give him a pass. But that's not Keir Starmer. He's not that man. He's not a clown. He's not a person who waves his arms around. And I do feel that you are quite right, Andrew, that we've become used to, or actually yearn for, being entertained. And that's where Nigel Farage comes in. He's that person. The chap that can go up on stage and do his act. And we're seduced by that, or at least just enough people are. But that's, you know, I mean, look at what a mess that it got this country in to be being seduced by someone with an act. 0345-6060-973. Let's see. Manchester. Oh, Paul. Oh, there you are. Yes, Paul.
Hiya, Nick. Funnily enough, if it was a choice between Boris Johnson and Nigel Farage, even I'd want Boris Johnson back. And I'm left-wing, but gosh, the thought of Nigel Farage is even scarier than Boris Johnson. And I think I've spoke to a few people. In fact, my mum said if it came to a choice between Tory and Reform, and we're not at all for them parties at all, she'd vote Tory to keep out Reform. And it makes you wonder how many other people would do that, do you know what I mean?
Voting for the least worst option.
Yes, because at least we've lived through Boris Johnson and sort of survived, haven't we?
Some of us have, yeah.
Yeah, but I was going to say, I would like to see Keir Starmer plod on until at least the local elections, and maybe even to his second year anniversary, but I think it's been obvious long before this that he's not going to be the leader to take us into the next general election, and I always saw him as someone maybe getting to 2 or 3 years, like Theresa May and Gordon Brown and one or two others, like even Boris did, and then maybe time for a change. But what he needs to do now, Morgan McSweeney is gone, and I'd argue there's someone else in the cabinet who needs to be demoted as well, and that's Pat McFadden, because he's a bit tainted as well, do you know, with all this. There's pictures of him with Mr. Mandelson, just doing business in London, of course, but he's also in with McSweeney and all that, and very on the right wing of Labour. So I would actually do a swap and demote him and let Rebecca Long-Bailey come back into Cabinet, because she's an extremely clever lady on the left of politics in the Labour Party, and very competent, I think. And I'd let her be working pension secretary, because it's a perfect role for someone like her. They need to open up some positions now for the very left of the Labour Party.
Well, what about Angela Rayner? Because she was pictured getting her hair done today, and, you know, her name is constantly being thrown into the potential hat for a future leader. What do you think about that?
Well, I'm a big fan of Angela Rayner, obviously a bit disappointed with how things have gone, but I never see Angela Rayner quite on the left of the Labour Party as the Socialist Campaign Group. She's never been a member of the Socialist Campaign Group. She's been a bit more right of that. So people keep going on about her as the Red Queen and the face of the left, and she's very traditional Labour, a bit like a female version of Dennis Skinner, but not quite as left-wing, but she's not in the Socialist Campaign Group. She's in the soft left group, and the only grouping that's untainted by this completely, the Mandelson affair, is a Socialist Campaign Group. And there's some there that maybe wouldn't suit being in a Keir Starmer government, but I think Rebecca Long-Bailey could. She was there before. Someone like Dawn Butler, even Clive Lewis, you know what I mean? You don't have to go for the Richard Bergen probably wouldn't suit being in it, because he's very outspoken. But I just think they need to do what Tony Blair did with Robin Cook and Claire Short and Mo Molan, and bring some of them figures in. And you never know, we might, maybe an Angela Rayner, Rebecca Long-Bailey ticket, like, was originally going to happen if Keir Starmer hadn't won the leadership, you know what I mean? Because that was what was going to happen if Rebecca Long Bailey would have been leader if Keir Starmer hadn't won it. You know what I mean?
Right. Okay. All right, Paul, I'm going to have to leave it there because I'm just running out of time. But thanks for that. I want to squeeze one more in before the news. Dartford. Hello, Claire.
Hello, Nick. Yeah, I just want to say that I think Starmer should carry on. Now this, Morgan has gone. Despite of all the praise that was given by, what a great choice that was for ambassador. This has all come and backfired, hasn't it, with the supposed leaks. I mean, Epstein's been dead for ages, so he can't be a friend with him because he's gone. But now it's came out that he's supposedly been giving information to this man when he was alive and supposedly been passing.
We don't really know the details about it, but it doesn't appear to be getting any better. No, that is certainly true. Claire, I'm going to give you the last word on that. Appreciate that. Thank you. Now, still to come in this show, in the next hour, we're going to be talking to our US correspondent, because there's no end of stories that are coming out of America at the moment, as always with the you-know-who in the you-know-where. We're also going to be getting a weather update to see if the rain is ever going to stop. But first, with student loan interest spiralling, the government is facing renewed calls to scrap student debt, or at the very least, reduce the interest that they pay on that debt. Would you go to university today, knowing the financial burden that comes with it? 0345 6060 973. Friday, Saturday, Sunday night at 10. Nick Abbott, LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midnight. The Prime Minister's former chief of staff has called for vetting procedures to be overhauled following his resignation over the Peter Mandelson affair. Morgan McSweeney has left Downing Street after taking responsibility for his appointment as the British ambassador to Washington. Mr. Mandelson was sacked in September over his friendship with the dead paedophile Jeffrey Epstein. LBC's political editor is Aggie Chambray.
The reason he has gone is because of the immense amount of pressure on him by members of the Labour Party, who were basically saying that there was no way through this without Morgan McSweeney going. And one minister saying to me that this was not enough to placate the critics, saying it's all a little too late, putting massive questions about where Keir Starmer stands.
Peter Mandelson remains under investigation by the Metropolitan Police following allegations he gave sensitive government information to Jeffrey Epstein during his time as business secretary 17 years ago. He's denied any wrongdoing. The Labour MP Natalie Fleet has been telling LBC her party's had a difficult 7 days.
Keir Starmer promised that we would change and we would have less drama and more delivery. And my God, he's absolutely been working towards that. But this week has been a mess.
Four people have been charged with murder following the death of a 17-year-old boy in South Wales. They're now due before Newport magistrates later on today. Tristan Shea Kerr was found dead in the village of Abertreedore near Caerphilly last week. It's being claimed the British public does not want to see the assisted dying bill fall in the House of Lords. New polling is suggesting many believe peers are delaying it intentionally. LBC's Holly Harris has more.
The terminally ill adults bill has been passed by MPs in the Commons. It's now going through the Lords, but data from More in Common shows 44% of people think they're actually against the bill. The government says it's remaining neutral on the issue. It was introduced by the Labour MP, Kim Leadbeater. It makes provision for terminally ill adults who are expected to die within 6 months to request and lawfully get help to end their own life.
And in sport and in football, Rangers have been drawn against Celtic in the quarterfinals of the Scottish Cup. The two rival sides from Glasgow will meet next month. LBC weather, mostly cloudy overnight with outbreaks of rain which will move northwards. Mist and fog could develop in Northern Ireland and also over higher ground elsewhere in the UK, we'll see a low in places of around 6 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Tim Daly.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Abbott.
Graduates saddled with spiralling student loan debt should have their interest rates lowered to help them manage the monthly repayments, a former education secretary has said. It was Alan Johnson, who was also universities minister. He's called for the government to stop using the discredited measure of inflation, the Retail Prices Index, to calculate interest and switch instead to the standard measure, which is now the Consumer Prices Index, which is usually about a percent or so lower. Let's talk about this with Professor Tony Breslin. Professor Breslin is author of Lessons from Lockdown and joins us on the line now. Good evening, Professor.
Good evening, Nick.
I think education is the most essential thing alongside health for the future of the country. Places like Germany, Norway, Finland, Sweden, Denmark, Austria, Slovenia, Greece, Poland, none of them charge fees for higher education. Do you think that because we do, we are destined to fall behind?
Well, I think it's got to be a risk. I mean, if you want as many of your young people to be as well educated as possible, the obvious approach is to withdraw barriers to that. And those barriers are likely to be highest for those who traditionally have been least likely to go to university. So in terms of social mobility, easing access to university in terms of removing economic cost is absolutely vital.
Yes, I mean, it seems fairly obvious, but it's a point worth making. The high price of going to university is actually reinforcing the wealth gap, isn't it? Because the well-off can pay the fees straight away, and so they don't pay any interest at all.
Absolutely. I think there's a moral problem at the heart of this. Many of the people who've made the decisions about the introduction and the evolution of the system of student loans and student fees and all the rest of it, well, we were the very people who benefited from a free higher education. It seems that we're charging our children and our grandchildren fees that we didn't pay. So that concerns me as well.
Yeah, it's those going to university are probably not going to like hearing this, but it wasn't only free. They used to pay us to go.
They did, actually, yeah. I'd rather forgotten that. It wasn't a fortune, but it was something.
Yeah. And people who don't go to university, they may be hearing this, and they might think, well, I'm not going. Why should I, through my taxes, pay for somebody else to go to university? Well, what would you say to that?
Well, I think you could use that argument about just about any area of public expenditure. Why should people who don't have children pay taxes for other people's children to be educated? Why should people without cars pay for roads to be fixed? You know, the point is that taxation is a common pool. It's a public pool. And we decide as a society periodically through the ballot box on the things that we think are important. Time and again, people have said a good education system is important. I think actually what we shouldn't get into is, where it's saying only a university education will do. I think we've put far too little into developing our systems around apprenticeships and industrial training and all the rest of it. But actually, if we want a better society, we want well-educated people in it. We need well-educated teachers and doctors engineers and the rest of it. So it's in all of our interests that our society is as well-educated as it can be.
Yeah, do you think that too many people are going to university? I mean, it was Tony Blair's push, wasn't it, to go from, I can't remember exactly how much it was, but when I went to uni, it was about 5%, maybe yeah. Not even that much. And he wanted 50% of people to go to uni. What do you make of that push?
Well, I'm an educator. I've worked in education all my life, so I'm a biased voice. I'm probably not the person to ask this. But I don't think you can have too much education. Right. Whether we spend on the right things and incentivize the right things is another point. But on the vexed kind of 50% thing, so often I hear this call. You know, it's very often from a plummy voice on the radio or the TV saying too many children are going to university today. But you know they've been to university. Their parents went to university, and their children and grandchildren will. They're talking about other people's kids. And that's what I, you know, as someone who was the first in their family to benefit from a university education, I know, and many of my peers know, how transformative that can be. Let's make sure, what we got wrong with the 50% target was we made no commitment to the other 50%. And I don't think it's either or. So we've got far too few young people doing high-quality apprenticeships. And I'm chair at an FE college. You know, it's our bread and butter. It's what we champion all the time. We should be massively incentivising that area. But we don't have to trade one for the other. We need people educated in different things at all levels. But, you know, whatever the employment market, whatever the wider economy, actually, an educated population is a good thing in itself.
Do you think that some subjects should be taught, charged differently to others? Because it seems difficult to understand why somebody who's doing mechanical engineering, for instance, who require an entire building's worth of humming machinery, are charged the same amount as somebody who studies English.
Well, I'm always a little bit worried about getting into a system where you pay different amounts to do different courses, because that conveys all sorts of values. The truth is that we need a broad range of knowledge. Now, what I can see is a model where what you might do is you might, for a fixed period, incentivize applications to particular courses. But we're into all of this stuff because we're one of those countries that charges fees for this in the first place. So we might need to look at how we encourage people into certain things. We might use economic levers there. But what we don't want to get into is this notion that some subjects are of great value and some are of less value. Because I think in the round, actually, you know, the vast majority of young people study important stuff, different stuff, and stuff that will fulfil them as they go forward in their lives.
Yes, I mean, we're told that people should go to university and you know, do mechanical engineering or medicine or so on, things that have a very clear career path. And we're usually told that by people who went to Oxford and Cambridge and studied politics and philosophy.
Exactly.
Or the classics, you know, fairy stories, essentially.
Yeah.
So it's a bit hard to take lectures from people like that on this subject, isn't it?
I kind of agree. We might be being a bit hard on PPE graduates from Oxbridge or whatever. It seems to me that we need a high-quality higher education system. We need to make sure that the economic barriers to entering it are as low as possible. I'd go further than Alan Johnson. I've always been a great admirer of Alan Johnson. But I would go further and say that the student loan rate should never be more than 0.5% above the base rate. In other words, if we are going to have a system of student loans, and I'd rather we didn't, but if we are, then actually what we shouldn't do is have financial institutions, or the government for that matter, using it as a cash cow, because that's utterly the wrong place to draw the funding from.
Yeah, do you think that there's a danger, though, in arguing about which measure of inflation, RPI or CPI, which is a difference of about 1%, something like that, and then there's 3% on top of that as well. Do you think that we're in danger of actually missing the goal here, which might be that there should be 0% charged on fees and on loans in order to persuade people that, improving their education is actually a doable thing for them?
I'm absolutely in sympathy with that. I mean, that's my suggestion. It's an RPI. My suggestion is that we just tie it to the base rate and at 0.5% above the base rate, because that covers, you know, kind of transactional costs. But there's no reason in my mind at all why we should be charging students 3% more than we would ordinarily justify. That seems to me to just be positively disincentivizing pathways into education and therefore into social mobility and so on.
Yes. Now, a graduate has to earn about $66,000 a year before they start paying off their debt, apparently. I wonder what effect that has on the kind of subject that a student studies, because the things that Britain is known for don't pay that kind of money. We're known the world over for punching above our weight in music, the arts, the theatre, yeah, and so on. Very unlikely to provide that level of salary for graduates, yet they're vital to our economy.
Yeah, I'm not sure, Nick, what the figures are here, because I've heard incredibly different figures quoted. But I would agree with you entirely on the point that what we need is we need to make sure, and of course this is the point about, charging engineers less or charging artists more or whatever. We don't want to disincentivize the very areas that this country has, been absolutely fantastic at. And if we look at the significant decline in the number of people studying the arts at university, in the number of people studying the social sciences at university, the number of people studying the humanities, actually that's a real concern. And that's driven by this thinking that the only, only those things that pay big in the economy or are important to the economy matter. And it's also based on the premise that a university degree is just for employment. It is for life in the broader sense. Yes, it's given me better employment opportunities, but it's given me better life chances and better life experiences, access to better life experiences in a whole range of ways. And what we must avoid is this kind of narrow utilitarianism where we simply focus on those so-called shortage areas. Of course, we might want to boost access to medicine or to teaching or to nursing or whatever at a particular point in time. But actually, we need to get away from this idea that some subjects are somehow more important than others. And we certainly ought to avoid this phrase, Mickey Mouse degrees. I mean, I say to a lot of people, look, Mickey Mouse has been going strong for over a century.
Yes.
He's outlived the smokestack industries into which he was born. And one of the things we need to bear in mind here, the children currently in our reception classes, and I speak as a school governor here, most of them will work in industries that don't yet exist, making goods and services that haven't yet been invented to meet needs that we don't yet know we have. So actually what we really need our young people to do is we need them to leave school and college and university with a love of learning. Because if they love learning, they'll be able to do those new things. They'll be able to retrain and retrain and retrain again, because most of them won't have one career for life. They'll have three careers over the lifespan, and a lot of them will do two or three things at any one time. And the individuals that will prosper are the ones that have a capacity for learning and a love for learning, because actually switching in this incredibly fast-changing world will not be a challenge for them.
Yes. Do you think that the educational establishment has actually taken on board this tsunami of change that is about to happen to us, and the jobs that people have been sort of pushed into, by taking the recognised form through university of being, accountancy or law or whatever it might be, those jobs are quite possibly going to get swept away. They won't exist by the time that these students come out of university with, £66,000 to £100,000 debt over their heads.
Yeah, in terms of the march of AI and all the rest of it, I mean, it seems to me that actually we may see some reversal in employment status in this respect, because what we may find is that those things that require on-site skills and on-site application, not mediated through a screen, not done from home, they may be the things that raise a premium in the future. The broader point, no, the education system hasn't got its head around this. You know, our schooling system was designed in a period from the mid-19th to the mid-20th century. We're going to need, when people had one career where the majority of people didn't move on to professional careers at all, but where people often lived, you know, where they'd grown up, or if they migrated, they migrated once and settled. We're looking at a much more mobile world. And we're going to need a very different education system to meet those challenges. And certainly there's some really good thinking going on at the moment. But if you go around the Heritage Park, although there's a bit more technology there now, every other space has changed, but the classroom still looks remarkably similar. We're still very much working on educational models that were devised at least a century ago. And if you look at the timetable that young people study nowadays, they're very much similar to the timetable that I studied in secondary school. I mean, there's a couple of tweaks, there's a bit more technology, and the blackboard is now a whiteboard. But the fundamental dynamics have not changed anywhere near enough in terms of the world we're moving towards. That's a big project.
Very good to talk to you, Professor. Thanks so much for that. That's Professor Tony Breslin, author of Lessons from Lockdown. So it's certainly different now than when it was when I went to university, when it was, as I mentioned before, it wasn't only free, they gave us money to go. These days, it looks more like a money-making exercise on behalf of the government, who loans you the money to go, and then they charge you a colossal interest rate. And unless you start and paying it off straight away, then that is just, it's going to compound and get bigger and bigger and bigger. I mean, it must be something that puts people off from going in the first place, quite possibly to the detriment of this country, because if we are competing with other countries, our closest neighbours in Europe, who don't charge for their education, their higher education at all, then it seems like impossible to believe that there's any other way than that we do start to fail in comparison to them. So I guess there's two things to think about. Is that is it the right thing to charge people to go to university at all? I mean, it's free in Scotland, for instance. Or if so, then this rate of interest that's ladled on, that seems particularly unfair, doesn't it? 0345 6060 973 LBC.
Weekdays from 7 a.m.
They have fatal incompetence.
Straight to the point.
What is the problem they've got over there?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
The country's going backwards. Growth down. Energy prices up.
Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store. LBC.
It's another day at Screwfix, and Sir Mo Farah is still getting to grips with things.
So, Mo, with Sprint Delivery, we get the order to them in as little as 20 minutes. Mo?
Mo?
Done. He was on the 18th floor.
Nice work. But, you know we use delivery riders, right?
Oh, now you tell me.
Sprint it in as little as 20 minutes. Screwfix. No stopping you. Conditions and geographical restrictions apply.
For the nappies, peekaboos and tea parties. Mess, tantrums and sleepless nights. All those yo-yos, action figures and shinies. Lifts to mates, lifts to parties, lifts everywhere. For each and every one of those teenage years. Let's be honest. You probably owe your parents one. So tell them about pension credit. It could boost their pension income by an average of over £4,000 a year. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Leading Britain's conversation. Nick Abbott. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
So we're looking at the cost of going to university, not only the cost itself, but everything that goes with it, and the money that you borrow in order to get your place there is then... It seems particularly cruel to me that it's charged at anything more than, let's say, a tiny 1% or something. But it's not. It's RPI plus 3%, which is about, what, 6, 7% now. And given that you need to earn about $66,000 a year before you start paying off the debts, I mean, that you could be 10, 20 years out of university before you earn that kind of money, by which time the debt that you owe has skyrocketed. Derby, hello, Brent.
My friend, you're talking education. I couldn't resist. So the first year of my 22-year teaching career started to change my advice, which has always been, in class kids like myself, go to university, social mobility, get a degree, travel the world, better yourself, doesn't matter what degree it is, be intrinsically motivated, the passage, prove yourself, and go off and have a good life. And that's always been the sort of advice I've given my students, because that's what I'm able to do. I was the last year to get the free grant and access to a student loan. I did recently, when I sat down with one of my colleagues who's just entered the teaching profession, her notes. They've got a maths. For some reason, they're teaching, because at the moment they could probably be earning twice as much actually out of teaching, but they're intrinsically motivated, class like myself. And my debt coming out of university for 5 years, from 96 to 2001, was about 12 grand. Debt was 75 grand.
Did you just say 75?
75 grand.
Wow.
When I also factored in my starting wage, on real terms, would have been £36,000, but the government's crowing saying new graduates come out and earn 3 grand, so you're 6 grand below, about 60 grand down in debt. And then when I factor in house prices, when I went to look at a house in 2002, 2003, they've doubled in price. Squeeze when the house prices, squeeze when it comes to a massive amount of debt, starting wage is a lot lower. When people go, oh, great, you stay in the public sector, you get a big fat pension. People stay 5-10 years maximum these days. Being squeezed everywhere.
Brent, I'm really sorry, but there's something terribly wrong with your line. It's shaving off the front part of pretty much every word that you're saying. So I get the message. Appreciate that. But I think your phone is failing you. So I'm going to have to move on. But thanks. South Shields. Hello, Joanne.
Good morning, Nick. Good show. Nick, I went to university with no fees. Then I studied to be a teacher, but I ended up working in a university student union as an academic advisor, helping failing students. Now, I think we can't afford not to deal with this, because the impacts are huge. Lowering birth rates, immigration. Also, we won't have the educated people we need to fulfil our roles. Immigration. Now, I'm a lefty, so I want people to have free education. It benefits us all. But if you're not a lefty, open up your brain to the thought what we really need to do, pay these kids to go to university free, because you might not want immigrants looking after you. So just pay the fees, because it's going to have, honestly, we need more kids. We need people to be able to afford housing. And it enriches us in so many ways. So I just think, do something about it now.
All right. Okay, thanks, Joanne. It does seem to be self-defeating to make it difficult for people in this country to go and acquire more education, because it's what the future of this country depends on, that and the health service. So that we're charging so much when the countries that we are in direct competition with are giving it away for free. That just, and of course it started with David Cameron. This all started with the Tory government of David Cameron, the interest rate on student loans. And if the intention was not to bake in wealth inequality, then, well, the result is exactly that. It could just be an unfortunate coincidence. Let's assume so. Hereford. Hello, Heather.
Hello to you. Yes, I do think it's cruel to be saddled with a great big debt. And I don't think young people sometimes know the difference between a grant and a loan. I think the education is so poor that, if we could extend the education a couple of more years to give students time to find what is really suitable for them, because
Well, I think they know the difference between a grant and a loan, because they're opposite. but they might not have taken on board quite how much of a desperately bad financial position that they will be in eventually once they graduate.
I know. It's a terrible feeling to have to, if you owe money. It's not a good place to start in life. It's wicked. It should be reduced right down to like a minimum of 1% and kept at that. I mean, people shouldn't spiral and spiral. How did the government get away with doing that? It would be called Rip Off Britain, I think it's called.
Well, it seems like a rip off to me. Yeah.
I agree.
All right.
You know, when you go in the forces, they sort of assess a person and they find the niche that they should be in. And if education could roll out some sort of scheme, you know, to give people time, because, you know, is it the passion that drives them to do what they do, or, you know, to find their real true path would be ideal.
Yeah, some people know what they want to do. They've always known what they want to do. And others seem to be, completely unsure, perhaps because they lack the sort of life experience that would have introduced them to what they eventually would, excel at. So, yeah, there's something to be said for not going straight from school to university, I suppose. Thanks for that, Heather. Wood Green, Saul.
Oh, yeah, hi. I'm thinking, I mean, interesting what the interview you had. I think, for now, I did an acting and drama music degree, and I've had to delete it off my CV because I'm interested in manufacturing now. And it didn't do me any favours to have that on my CV. So I've only existed for the last 6 years, according to my CV, and you know, everything before that is like a mystery. And I hope they don't ask the question. But what I rung up is that I'm really finding it, as I'm in manufacturing, anything I need to find out, you know, it's just coming to me through simple asking, you know, AI, I need to find out. And it's extraordinary because I'm just like, this is a complete luxury. Whereas before you'd have to go to university and be to find out all this information, all of a sudden, you know, I'm just finding it so easy to find solutions to things. I'm thinking, this is just incredible.
Yes, I wonder if all of the things that people used to have to study a long time to do, like accounting and law, are going to be, all of that studying and hard work is going to be replaced by a computer chip.
Yeah, and then I was thinking to myself, well, you know, if the idea that we're going to have to train people to be sort of multi-diverse, then I think AI universities are going to be the norm. I mean, if you're going to put your money anywhere, just put it into AI universities. So the cost comes down. You can do a course over 5-6 years, multiple learning. They've already got these subscription apps and things you can do, but why not just turn that into a university degree?
Right, and save the money. That's an interesting thought. I'm going to have to leave it there, Saul, but thanks for that. Now, I'm going to take a short break for the news. Then we are going to get a weather update. There's a lot of it about. And at the end of this hour, in about 10 minutes or so, we're going to start talking with US correspondent Simon Marks. It's 12:30 on LBC, the news headlines with Tim Daly.
The Prime Minister's former chief of staff has called for vetting procedures to be overhauled following his resignation over the Peter Mandelson affair. Morgan McSweeney's left Downing Street after taking responsibility for his appointment as the British ambassador to Washington. Four people have been charged with murder following the death of a 17-year-old boy near Caerphilly in South Wales. They're now due before Newport magistrates later on today. And almost 100 flood warnings remain in place across the UK following continued spells of heavy rain since the new year. A yellow alert for downpours has been issued, affecting the south of England and parts of Wales. LBC weather, mostly cloudy overnight with outbreaks of rain which will move northwards. Mist and fog developing in Northern Ireland that could also materialise on high ground elsewhere across the UK. We'll see a low of around 6 degrees.
This is LBC.
Train to Chichester. Flasks filled, snacks packed, all ready for Maisie's first stargazing adventure.
Come on, Maisie. Follow everyone up to the top of that hill.
Oh, look, that one's the plough.
Shooting star. Wow.
Made it. Last train back and feeling cosmic. And it seems we have an astronaut in the making. Download the Southern Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story.
Check your retirement savings are on track with PensionBee's easy-to-use app. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
All right, resistance up. Let's climb.
Okay, here we go.
Oh, my knee's playing up again.
Have you ever had it looked at?
No, but I've been doing a few stretches.
When my shoulder went, Benenden Health got me expert help. Showed me exactly where I was going wrong.
30 seconds, people.
Press play on your health with physiotherapy and much more. All for less than £16 per person per month. Search Benenden Health. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services, including physio. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use.
Interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down,
not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with 3 tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
There were 88 warnings for rain, 223 alerts for rain in England as of Sunday morning. Most of the warnings located in the southwest of the Midlands. It just rains and it rains and it rains. Let's talk about this with John Ketley, the legendary weatherman, that joins us on the line now. Hello, John.
Hi there, Nick.
So, first of all, what's the difference between a warning and an alert? I've always wondered.
Well, I think when you get to a warning stage, it's almost to the point where you're trying to organise people to take extra care and probably have to leave their homes at short notice, I would imagine. Alert is just to tell people that there's some rain coming in the next 12, 18 hours or something, adding to the problems that we've already got, of course. I think once you get to flood warnings, then you're just getting much more serious, and then you get the red warnings, the severe flood warnings, when you really have to evacuate. So it's a question of perhaps sandbags at the ready to begin with. But, of course, the problem, Nick, is that we've had so much rain over the last few weeks and months that it's just becoming more and more difficult across many parts of the country. It's just absolutely waterlogged everywhere, and the rivers are more and more swollen. And with more bands of wet weather to come this week, it's not going to get any better.
Yeah, it reminds me of not last year, which was kind of the opposite, but the year before, where it just rained and rained and rained. I remember taking a train up through the middle of the country towards Wales, and I glanced out the window, and there was water as far as the eye could see, and I thought, God, the train track is really quite near the sea. But I wasn't anywhere near the sea. It was flooded farmlands to the horizon.
Yeah, not like Dawlish, where you are next to the sea, because we all remember that situation about 2013-14, wasn't it, when the rail track was hanging in midair?
Yes.
Because of all the heavy rain that we had that winter. So, you know, it is not an unprecedented event, isn't this? We've seen many occasions in the winter when the rain keeps on coming. And in 2020, I might add, it was very much the same, if not worse, at the same time of the year. And as we went through into spring in 2020, and we all remember what happened that year for other reasons, we had a wonderful spring.
It was marvellous.
It really was glorious weather. Yeah. So it doesn't mean to say it's going to rain forever. It's always stopped eventually. And who knows, there could be something really nice around the corner.
Well, we'll hang on to that. I'll ask what the forecast is in a minute. But it seems like the weather's been stuck. You know, at the beginning of the beginning of the winter, there was a period when it was just gloomy for weeks on end. You didn't see the sun. Apparently, Aberdeen has just had their longest period of not seeing the sun on record, and it's just so depressing. Is that sense that the weather just gets stuck in one mode? Is that a misperception, or is that actually happening?
No, that is actually quite normal, because not so much at this time of the year, because generally speaking, once you get through to November, December, January, and now into February, you're into the winter months, and usually you're getting the winds coming in from the Atlantic, bands of rain sweeping in, and especially affecting western and northern parts of the UK. Now, what's happened this year is that the jet stream, the famous jet stream, which really dominates our weather pattern, That's been much further south recently, so we've seen the heaviest rain, if anything, across at least more heavy rain than normal across more southern parts of England and into the West Country and parts of Wales, and also down in Spain, Portugal, central Mediterranean. It's been much wetter there than usual as well. That's all part and parcel of the jet stream being further south, but it's also affecting the way things are further north in these northern latitudes. We've also seen more of a northeasterly wind for much of the time as well. And that's the reason that Aberdeen's been so gloomy and very wet. They've had three times their normal rainfall during January, and very grey skies as well. I think many of us have seen really a lack of sunshine since the turn of the year. And everybody knows about this thing called SAD, S-A-D, Seasonal Affective Disorder. It can be very depressing after Christmas and New Year, partly because of the fact that we don't get that much sunshine, generally speaking, and this year has been, if anything, worse than ever.
So if the jet stream is south, that means that we're pulling the air in from the north, is that right?
Yeah, a colder, colder pattern, with the jet stream further south, it means the warmer air, well, milder air, I should say, probably at this time of the year, there's not much warmth about, but the milder air is actually further south as well. So we all the time, we're just triggering colder conditions from the north, and that's what's going to happen this week. So although we've got more heavy rain to come in the next 3 or 4 days, and there will be more flooding, there will be more waterlogging, more swollen rivers, it is going to be quite serious across the south of the country in particular, and up into Wales and the Midlands. From Thursday onwards, we are starting to see quite a plunge of colder air from Scotland. It's coming in from the Arctic, actually north of Scotland. So there will be some snow, more extensive snow, I would say, across the mountainous areas of northern Britain come Thursday into Friday. And some of that snow will actually move further south as well. It'll probably be a band of rain moving into the southeast. But that, on its back edge, there could be some slushy snow come Friday morning. So we are in for a change there. I think it's just a temporary incursion of this very cold air. But then there's another band of pretty heavy rain coming in during Sunday from the west, coming back in from the Atlantic. But because the colder air is then sitting over us at the weekend, some of that rain will actually start off as snow once again in some central and eastern parts.
Now, if the effect that the weather that we've had, which was a lot of rain and the ground got soaked and, you know, a lot of rain sort of went into the cracks in the roads, and then we had that period of really cold weather, and it was very still and cold weather, and it was like zero or below for quite a few days running, and it's had an absolutely catastrophic effect on the roads, hasn't it? Because that water, as ice, then expands. And look, roads around where I live, I'm sure much of the country have been turned into, well, they just look like country tracks rather than A roads and better.
Yeah, potholes. That's the word you're looking for, isn't it?
It is. Everywhere. So we're going to get more of that.
So we're going to get more potholes, I'm sure. It'd be very difficult to get these things mended. I wish they'd just cover the whole road in new tarmac, but instead of trying to patch it up, I think patching up is ridiculous. It just doesn't work. And round where we are, we've got, it's just basically mud at the side of the road now. It used to be a grass verge. It's now just muddy everywhere. And, potholes as well. It's going to be awful running into spring. Let's hope we do get some of that nice warmer weather coming back. It's bound to stop raining eventually. It always has done before. So look forward. There's a silver lining on some cloud anyway.
Right. So, we'll hold on to that as a prospect. But we are coming towards the end of actual winter, aren't we? There's about another sort of 3 weeks or so to suffer through. And is there any indication as to what it's going to be like in spring? Yes.
Well, I'm going to hang on to this idea that we're going to follow 2020, because if in doubt, just stick with something that's happened before. There's nothing wrong with that, actually. It's quite a logical thing to go with, because the rain, as I say, the rain's bound to stop. At some point, it will dry up. The blocking pattern will be different. The jet stream will move back north again. That'll allow high pressure to move in from the Azores. That will bring drier conditions. It'll also bring warmer weather as well. So that's where we're going with it. I think come, let's say March into April, we should be looking at some much more amenable weather, a chance to dry out and a chance to mend those potholes.
And just finally, if you wouldn't mind, the forecast for the next week or so, as far as you can see?
Well, starting off very wet, more bands of rain sweeping in from the southwest during Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday and into early Thursday. So we're all going to see some more rain. We're going to see more waterlogging across many parts of the country. Temperatures, though, are pretty good. Yeah, well, looking at 9 to 12 degrees countrywide. And we've lost some of that snow in Scotland now, so that any snow that was around is gradually melting away, apart from right on the top of the Grampians. So milder conditions moving in, and then the chance of some hard frost coming in at the end of the week. Bit of snow for some of us before more wet weather moves in from the Atlantic over the second half of the weekend. And then following that, next week, a bit of a mishmash, really. I think some warm days, some mild days, some cold days. Always a chance of some heavy bouts of rain, but also some snow for the higher ground.
Very good to talk to you, John. Thanks so much for that. That is John Ketley, the legendary weatherman. Now we're going to take a short break, and then it is off to America to talk to Simon Marks.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Clive Ball.
With his chief of staff gone, will Keir Starmer be next? Would you rather go to the dentist than spend an hour thinking about pensions? Plus, how to avoid family will disputes.
Clive Ball at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
LV, I can get my home insurance from just £133. They've made it easy for me to get a great price. And their 24/7 emergency helpline lets me look after what matters to me. Because insurance is simple when it's me and LV.
No wonder we're rated excellent on Trustpilot. Get your quote today at lv.com. 10% of new customers paid £133 or less July to December 2025. LV General Insurance is part of Allianz.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now, he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's going to happen, it's not worth it. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of, but he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Turn ordinary into the extraordinary every day with the Lexus LBX. Whilst most SUVs are big and brash, the LBX is quietly bold and confident. Refined luxury crafted into a compact SUV. The Lexus LBX. What car's best small SUV 2024 and 2025?
Pets in a pickle. We know what it's like welcoming a new pet into the family. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Leading Britain's conversation, Nick Abbott. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
Simon Marks is LBC's Washington correspondent, and he joins us on the line from there now. Hello, Simon.
Good evening, Nick.
How the devil are you?
I'm very cold. It is absolutely bone-numbingly cold here. We didn't break -5 degrees Celsius today. I've never known a winter like it, and they've invented a new word here. We are suffering from something that the mayor of Washington, D.C. describes as snowcrete. You ever heard of that?
No.
So basically, we had a modest snowfall, about 6 or 7 inches of it, now
modest.
2 weeks ago.
You know that that would bring...
modest by local
well,
standards.
Well, yeah, that would bring this country to a halt.
Well, it brought Washington, D.C. to a complete standstill. And because they didn't clear the snow when it was powdery in sufficient quantities, we're stuck with stuff that has turned basically to what you or I would refer to as ice. But in order to avoid explaining why the snow wasn't cleared in a timely fashion, the mayor, who is widely being accused of having botched this completely, is now explaining that we are suffering from something called snowcrete. And that they could, like concrete, except made of snow.
Mm.
And they can't possibly move it until the temperatures warm up and it melts. But that's, you know, that's just one aspect of life here.
He also might not want to use the word ice.
Yes, yes. Well, that's also possible.
Now, let's start with The Lion Sleeps Tonight, A Womb Away, which is still exercising people on actually both sides of the aisle, isn't it?
Yes, very much so. I mean, Donald Trump still has a massive problem with Republicans who are pushing him to apologize. I mean, and he's gone so far, of course, as to delete the reposting of that video, which included at the end of it a two-second meme from a previously distributed longer video that had got other Republicans into difficulty last year because it shows the Obamas as primates in a jungle. So he's now, you know, he deleted it yesterday under pressure. But the pressure from his fellow Republicans has not really alleviated. Even today, Congressman Mike Lawler of New York, who is considered one of the most at-risk Republicans in this November's midterm elections, was on ABC saying that the president has got to apologize. Sometimes he says it's just better to say I'm sorry and move on. And, of course, Donald Trump isn't really in the apology business. But
Has he ever said sorry about anything at any time?
I don't think so. I was thinking about it the other day. I mean, there must be something deeply psychological from his childhood where, you know, you simply were told never to apologize for anything because he never does. But it's put his political defenders in difficulty here this weekend. And, of course, all of this is manna from heaven, manna from Donald Trump's social media feed for Democrats who have taken to political rallies in various parts of the country this weekend. Senator John Ossoff, who's considered the most at-risk Democrat in the United States Senate in this November's midterm elections, saying to the people of Georgia yesterday in a rally in Atlanta, are you seeing what I'm seeing, the president of the United States going after the Obamas like a member of the Ku Klux Klan? And so this is really providing Democrats with an opportunity to try and drive a further wedge between Donald Trump and particularly voters of color. Remember that African-American voters backed Donald Trump in unprecedented numbers in the 2024 presidential election. I mean, there was a measurable movement of black voters away from Democrats and to Donald Trump. And, of course, he also performed well with Hispanic voting members of the public, whose support is obviously in doubt more because of the mass immigration issue and the thuggish behavior of ICE and the Border Patrol than necessarily because of this tweet. But it provides Democrats with extraordinarily valuable ammunition as they are hoping that they can find a way of getting their act together finally and maybe eking out a victory at the midterm term elections in November, even though Donald Trump made it very clear this week that if they win the midterms in November, the Democrats, he, the president, is simply not going to recognize their victory is legitimate.
Yeah, I mean, just going back to that post, there were two options, weren't there? Only two options are available. Either Donald Trump did it, because I think the post, was it after midnight, between midnight and 3 a.m., something
about
like that?
1 or 2 o'clock in the morning,
right,
yeah.
Okay, so Caroline Levitt, his scary Barbie, whatever people are calling her.
I think press secretary.
Yeah, that's it. She said, you know, nobody's interested in this. Move on, losers, or words to that effect.
Fake outrage.
Right, and then Donald Trump's people then sort of had to think about it, and they said, it wasn't Donald Trump, it was a staffer. So are we really supposed to believe that a staffer pulled Donald Trump's phone out of his weirdly small hands at 2 o'clock in the morning and then tweeted something unbeknownst to him?
Well, no, because then there was a third telling of the story that came from President Trump, who said that he had looked at the video. He says that he didn't watch it all the way through, but he liked the cut of its jib. Mm. And he said to the staffer, off you go, post that. And whether the staffer knew, certainly the president claims he didn't know, that those 2 seconds were at the end of the video. And I think it is worth making the point, Nick, this was a 61-second video. 2 seconds of it right at the end were these shameful racist images of the Obamas. The first 59 seconds was yet again more meaningless twaddle about how Donald Trump won the 2020 election and Joe Biden lost it. So he watched this thing through. It was a presentation that had been made at a conference, apparently, I think last year, by some, you know, pseudo academic who is spreading the conspiracy theory that Joe Biden actually won, lost in 2020, and that the election was rigged. And Donald Trump obviously looked at the first few seconds of this thing and said, yeah, absolutely great, right, because he's been talking all week again about how an election more than 5 years ago was rigged when we all know that it absolutely was not.
Yes.
So it was that thumbs up from the emperor that then led the assistant to click the mouse.
Right, okay. So now, that is believable. It was a minute long, which these days is too long, didn't watch.
Yes. Yeah. Watched 25 seconds of it, said, yeah, I like the look of that, let's put that up.
Okay. Now, the midterm elections, I think you charmingly think that America is going to have elections at some point in the future. I beg to differ, but Donald Trump appears to be doing everything that he possibly can in order to win, cheat, steal, insert the appropriate word here.
Yes, I mean, I do not rule out the Nick Abbott version of events here. I mean, anything can happen this year in America, including the deployment of armed forces on the streets of America to such an extent that the president of the United States turns around and says, we cannot have the elections. It is unsafe for the electorate to go to the polling stations. You cannot rule that out. But I think what we've seen from the president over the last 3 weeks, and particularly in the last week, is a growing sense that he's either going to rig the outcome of the elections or simply reject the outcome of the elections when Republicans lose. And what he's been talking about in the last few days is what he describes as nationalizing the election, taking the power to organize elections away from America's individual 50 states and putting that power in the hands of the federal government. In other words, the government that he runs. Now, that proposal is plainly unconstitutional. You don't even have to read beyond the first page of the Constitution to see that it's unconstitutional. It's in Article 1 of the Constitution. Elections are the preserve of America's states to administer within their own geographical boundaries. So he doesn't stand a snowball's hope of making that change. But what he's doing, I think, is laying the groundwork for saying, when the Democrats win, this was rigged. I mean, he was asked on NBC News this week in an interview, if Republicans lose the midterms in November, are you going to accept the outcome of the election? And he won't stipulate to accepting it, and indeed made the point that in 2024, when he, of course, won, we had a great election. So if the election is great and he wins, then it gets the thumbs up and there's no need to complain about it. But if he loses, then the election's rigged and he's going to protest and upend the country as a result of it. That, I think, is where he's heading with all of this.
Yes. Very, very scary times. Now, I suppose it's a little lighter, but not much. The Olympics is providing a diversion, an amusement, but he isn't amused.
He's not amused. Well, first a question. When is J.D. Vance booed at the Winter Olympics, but also not booed? Mm. And the answer is when you're watching NBC in the United States, because even though everybody in the stadium heard the boos, and even though everybody watching European television broadcasters carrying the Winter Olympics and Canadian broadcasters carrying the Winter Olympics heard the boos for the vice president in the opening ceremonies, if you were watching on NBC here in the United States, rather oddly, you didn't hear the boos. Today, the president of the United States has taken issue with a skier from the United States who's competing, who has expressed the view that he doesn't fully believe in Donald Trump's governing policies. He wasn't particularly outspoken about it. This is a skier by the name of Hunter Hess. not Herman Hesse, Hunter Hesse, yes. who has said that he has mixed emotions about appearing and representing the United States at the Olympics. He says there's obviously a lot going on back at home that I'm not the biggest fan of.
Yeah.
Well, Donald Trump has taken a social media blunderbuss to him and accused him of being a real loser and saying that he shouldn't have even signed up to join the team if he wasn't willing to fly not just the Stars and Stripes, but the flag of the Trump administration in Italy. This is going to be a gift that keeps giving, because there are more and more, there are increasing number of athletes. They're all being asked from the United States,
yes.
what do you think about what's going on at home, which is an extraordinary measure of how far this country has slid into the wilderness. And many of them are expressing very similar sentiments, and in some cases stronger sentiments than Hunter Hesse. So I think this is going to become a narrative for the rest of this Winter Olympic Games.
Yes. On my silly shows, I do a Donald Trump bingo card, and almost everything that I predicted last year actually came to pass. One of the things that did not, up until this moment, was that he was going to have an airport named after him.
Yes.
And he's actually insisted that an infrastructure project that New Yorkers and everybody on the East Coast is really relying on for the benefit of the nation, he's put a halt to it because he has stipulated... Well, you go ahead and tell us the story.
Well, he wants two major transit terminals named after him. He wants Penn Station in New York to be named after him in exchange for unfreezing these funds. And he wants Dulles Airport, which is the main airport for arriving international travelers here in Washington, D.C., which is already named after former Secretary of State John Foster Dulles. He wants Dulles Airport named instead after him as well. And he apparently conveyed this request in a meeting with Chuck Schumer, the Democrats' leader in the Senate. And Mr. Schumer's heavily involved in this negotiation, A, because he's their leader, but also B, because he comes from New York and he's desperate to get these funds unfrozen so that particularly the transportation infrastructure in New York itself can be improved. I mean, there's not a snowball's chance that the Democrats are going to back this, but it absolutely shows the extent to which the President of the United States is determined that building after building is going to be named after him, whether it's the Trump Kennedy Center, which is about to close for 2 years because it can't book any acts because everything's boycotting as a result of his decision to attach his name to it, the Trump Institute of Peace here in Washington, D.C., and heaven forfend, Penn Station and Dulles Airport. They're now both on the list.
If by this time next year he hasn't put his face on the Statue of Liberty, I'll be amazed. Simon, always a pleasure. Thanks for
Cheers,
that.
Cheers, Nick.
LBC's Washington correspondent, Simon Marks. Now, if you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can also stay up to date with all the latest news and the videos and the opinions that you'll find on there. If you haven't got it, then get it for free from your app store. You'll find the LBC app and the Global Player app both there. I'll be back Friday, Saturday, Sunday night at 10. Coming up at... I've got the wrong information on my screen again.
It's me.
Oh, it is. It is you. Right. So it's the
Richard
right
Spurs
information.
Having a lie down,
what
yeah.
a joy. Clive yeah. Ball.
Ah, thank you very much. Coming up after the news, it's me in for Richard Spur. And what are we going to talk about? Well, of course, can Starmer cling on? The Prime Minister's Chief of Staff has gone, and Keir Starmer will be hoping that could keep him in number 10. But do you think Starmer can cling on? And if not, what happens next? Is there anyone that would be a good replacement? Also, a new study out this morning suggests millions of Britons are putting off planning for their retirement, with 1 in 8 saying they would rather go to the dentist than spend 1 hour thinking about pensions. So do you prefer not to think about old age and retirement? That and much more coming up after the news at 1 0345 6060 973.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock.
the Prime Minister is due to face Labour MPs later following more fallout caused by the Peter Mandelson affair. It's expected he'll address a meeting of the Parliamentary Labour Party after the resignation of his Chief of Staff, Morgan McSweeney. He stepped down on Sunday over his role in appointing Mr. Mandelson as British Ambassador to Washington. But the Work and Pension Secretary, Pat McFadden, has told LBC he doesn't think Sir Keir Starmer is thinking that way.
I don't see why he would. He's been elected on a five-year mandate just 18 months ago. This was obviously the wrong appointment, but I think the Prime Minister's acted in good faith. I think he wants to do the right thing. I also think it's bad for the country to be changing Prime Minister every 18 months, every 2 years.
More on this with Clive Bull here on LBC over the next hour. A think tank is warning more than 300,000 children could be left in limbo if the Home Office proceeds with changes to the rules on legal migration. The Home Secretary outlined an end to automatic settlement status after 5 years in November. The Institute for Public Policy Research thinks her measures would cause insecurity for families. A Westminster committee has urged the government to confirm the name of one of the most notorious British agents connected to the Northern Ireland Troubles. It's widely believed that Freddie Scappaticci was a former army spy inside the provisional IRA known as Steak Knife. He died in 2023 at the age of 77. Yellow warnings for rain have been applied to large parts of the UK because of the arrival of more wet weather during today. The Met Office is predicting heavy showers for London and the South East, along with the South West of England and parts of Wales. The forecaster John Ketley has been telling LBC it will be another